None.
Hi, my name is Kathy Mitchell. I'm a first grade teacher at Bayview in our Fenton program. It's a bilingual program. And this evening, I just wanted to share some student work with you. In math, one of my goals, our goals is to develop mathematical reasoning, and we really want to make sure that our students are developing some deep understanding of number sense now. And so in first grade, we use blocks to build on, and then, of course, be related to our numbers. And as students become more proficient with what that symbolic representation is, many of them no longer need this, but some still need that support. And as we shift into that, another common tool is using a 100 chart. And one of the things we often do is to use a blank grid on the back with one number, and students fill in the missing numbers. And so that's one of the things I wanted to share, was just some of the work that they had done with that. So I'm just going to let you pass it around. as you look at A, you might think, oh great, this student, she's got it. We might look at B and we might say, whoops, that's wrong, what happened here? And so part of what happens is as they go to fill it in our class, the first thing we do is ask, why do you think that? And as you look at B, you might have come up with an idea. And what happens is as we ask, we found out from the students they were looking at the calendar. And they looked at 10, at 17, excuse me, and the number above was 10, and the number below was 24. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty clearly following a procedure. It's not really always showing understanding. So we had discussion, and we sort of discussed, okay, when you look at these, what patterns do you see? What's the same? What's different? Why is that? And so, of course, they realized that plus 1, minus 1, and that as we're counting on a calendar, we count by 7s. And we discovered that's a grid of 7 across. Not a very common thing, but it's a conceptual understanding that now that they know that, we can look at a grid of 2, which is even numbers, a grid of 3 and 5 and 10, which is, of course, the 100 chart. And that's really any number that now they can apply that to what they're doing in life. And that's sort of where we're going with that idea of conceptual understanding. Another piece of what happens is that I really want to understand. I'm thinking, what do we do next? So I ask them to write equations. And that lets me know, are they doing mental math? Are they counting on? Mm-hmm. Are they simply looking at a procedure again? Last thing is we really need to differentiate. Students learn at different rates at different times. So on the back, there's usually a blank one. And each child gets to choose their own number. And you can see that, like C, some students just choose a very common number initially. And then there's D. And if you just look at the thinking that is going on for D, that's incredible. And those are the things that really, looking at where students are and what they can do and challenging them. So I just wanted to share that snippet of our classroom to sort of what is the importance of really developing understanding the students and not just looking at procedure. And that's how our students are developing this competition. So thank you.
Thank you,
Kathy, very much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else that would like to make comments this evening? Seeing none, let's move on to the superintendent's report.
Okay, yeah, it's not going to work today.
No.
So, good evening. Tonight on the dais, you have a copy of the Gulf Elementary School Williams Settlement Legislation Report. Each fall, on an unidentified day, the county office comes and does a Williams visit to Galt Elementary School. And Galt was selected for this because of NCLB legislation from years ago, but they continue to be the one school that's visited. And I want to thank the Galt team and our facilities team and our curriculum team for the work that they do on this every year. It was a very positive report, and I just wanted to give it to you here so you had access to it. Mm-hmm. our visible learning site visits. On October 23rd, we had our first, we've done walkthroughs before as a district leadership team, but we're looking, we're going to school sites now, and we're looking at visible learning and the implementation of the visible learning and that, our efforts in that area. Once a month as a leadership team, we're visiting a school site to observe those efforts to implement visible learning. We visited Harbor High School on October 23rd, and we found a lot of evidence of teachers' efforts to ensure students know that each day's learning intention, each day's success criteria, and why they're learning what they're learning. Principal Tracy Rinieri shared what we observed from students with her staff immediately following the visit. We saw a lot of great practices, and we were able to talk about our efforts to use this instructional model, these instructional strategies across the district. On October 25th and 26th, we attended the West Coast Labor Management Conference with GSCFT and SCCCE leadership. It was a great couple of days. We learned that we have a lot of structures and strategies in place that successful collaborative districts do. And we also learned that we have a lot of opportunity to do things differently and more collaboratively, especially around teaching and learning. Our next steps are Molly and Casey are going to attend a regional conference in Northern California in our region in December 14th. And we're also, Casey's invited ABC Unified to come. They have a grant, and they support districts with this work. So they're going to come and meet with us to plan a February, they call it a PAL Day, so it's Partnership of Administration and Labor. And we're going to plan our own PAL Day for February, some time for site leaders and central office leaders and union representatives to come together and talk about how we want to work together and what we want, what values we and principles we want to have got to guide that collaboration. And we're really excited about those next steps. On Monday, I was able to attend the Santa Cruz County College Commitments Counseling Summit. It was focused on college and career readiness. Trish Hatch, who is a leader in the counseling field nationwide, provided the keynote. There were breakout sessions. This was provided as a part of the Gates Grant, but also with funding from Kaiser and Plantronics. So we were able to offer this training to counselors all across our county and 20 counselors from Monterey County. Right now, they have these kind of regional conferences in Riverside and San Diego, and we've been able to send a couple counselors over the last couple years, but this was a really enriching day. Mm-hmm. Everyone I spoke to felt like it was very valuable, and Michael Watkins is interested in supporting continued professional learning for our counselors in the coming years. And we're also working at S4C to reapply for the Gates Foundation monies to continue the work of S4C around college and career guidance and around mathematics professional learning. Yesterday, I also met with Chief Mills and Superintendent Watkins. We debriefed the lockdowns from the previous week. We talked about learnings and implications for our county threat assessment protocols and planning. And we agreed to hold a countywide training for school leaders and officers reviewing scenarios and our collective response in February. So we're working to get a date together. And Chief Mills is going to plan that training. Transcript audits. Today is part of the Santa Cruz County College Commitments Gate Foundation grant. We conducted a transcript audit at Santa Cruz High School. Tomorrow there'll be a transcript audit at Harbor High School. The goal of the audit is to look at obstacles for college readiness and obstacles to graduation. So looking at trends, it's a really powerful tool for looking at student data. It disaggregates data, looking at gender, ethnicity, income status, and really helps the school to look at and meeting requirements in each content area. So it breaks it down by content area and by all of those subgroups. Mm-hmm. And
is going to create an opportunity. A bunch of teachers as well as counselors participated in the audit today, and a group of teachers will participate tomorrow. Soquel High conducted the audit last year. And it's a tool for us to look at, are there any systemic things we have in place that may be blocking access or limiting students' progression through any particular content area? And we definitely saw today that our female students are outperforming our male students, which wasn't a surprise, but something for us to continue to look at. And I know that Brenton, his team's minds were all swirling, as was mine, after looking at the data at the end of the day. There's a lot to think about, a lot more questions to ask, which is often what data does for us. It raises more questions and things for us to explore as a school district. But it was a great opportunity, a really wonderful tool to quickly analyze by looking at all of last year's seniors and their four-year experience at our high school. So I'm not going to be able to participate in Harbors tomorrow, but Franks will be able to be there for their debrief. But we appreciate all the teachers and the counselors and the administrators who take the time to make that happen today and tomorrow.
That's it. So our student representative report, Danielle.
So we just had our homecoming 2.0.
Yeah.
Was canceled. It was really exciting. It was a big game. Both our JV and varsity won, which were big wins. That was really exciting. A lot of people showed up, a lot of spirit there. The floats were cool. Everybody had, each grade had a float. We had a lot of people dress up for Spirit Week. We had like Halloween, so everybody wore their Halloween costumes. That was exciting. We also, the past 2 weekends, have the school play, which they did the Laramie Project, which was really powerful. It was a really good play. And I think it was really important for the time, like right now. A lot of like crying in the audience, but it was really good.
Thank you. Sports?
I had the opportunity to attend the Soquel Girls St. Francis tennis matches. It was during the heat wave. The ladies were really quite kind. I play tennis, and so they're happy with some of the mending that's happening, and they were quick to point out that the cracks that have been filled are quicker than the other pieces. So they're very excited for what's to come at Soquel High. They have one senior, so they have a large junior sophomore returning class. Happy to see that program growing, and very thankful for the coaches who have helped build that out. I had the opportunity to go to the Monterey Bay League Boys Water Polo Championship game, which had both Soquel and Santa Cruz playing. It was a wonderful game, and one of the teams won by one goal, and that's how I'll leave it, because it was such a good game. I had the opportunity to visit with the superintendent and Principal Mary. I'm sorry, we call her Tracy, she's so nice, but I need to learn to pronounce her name correctly. It was an enriching conversation. I'm very thankful to have that in the time that we have, to get to know the needs and the climate at each school, and how it affects, what I'll need to consider in my decision making at different times. I did the Santa Cruz High campus cleanup with the Saturday school students at Santa Cruz a couple Saturdays ago. Always enjoyable. The students are a little slow to start, but they are quite chatty, and they give you a real pulse to what goes on. I have to say that now that this has gone on for 3 years with this particular group of parents at the helm, this was probably by far the easiest day to step into that campus. The fencing and the behaviors, and it appears to be the school spirit and climate are reflecting school pride. It was clean. There was very little to do in comparison to 4 years ago. So I'm thankful for that, and I'd like to just say that I'm thankful to Maria Gara, who started that. I'd like that in the notes. And then I'd like to congratulate the Santa Cruz High Water Polo team as they advance in the CCS playoffs. That's a real big deal. They're pretty happy. I know that they tied for league, but of the school teams, that's the school to continue. So thank you.
Just two quick things. I wanted to applaud the Santa Cruz High School Cardinal Regiment that hosted the Santa Cruz Band Review. It's been in town since 1971, and it's an event that I've often enjoyed, but this time was really right in the middle of watching how the staff and the students and the parents work together to make something that enormous happen so smoothly. And kudos particularly to Christy Latham, who of course leads that part of the effort on the staff side. And just a reminder that big events like that and great educational opportunities like that come with the parent involvement. That's so critical. It was very, very impressive. And then the second thing, I just wanted to thank the superintendent and others who have made some campus visits available to me. I've had the opportunity to go to SoCal High and then to Bayview and to Westlake with the superintendent and the principal. Principals are very welcoming of my getting a firsthand view of some of the educational opportunities in those schools. And it was really obvious how many exemplary teaching activities were going on. It was very heartwarming to see. And also so obvious was the clear and positive use of parcel tax revenues. The library programs, the art programs, the music programs, it just exuded wonderful things happening for students. So thank you for making those visits possible, and I look forward to doing more of them in the very near future. Thank you.
Okay, well, I went to the supervisors meeting to hear a report about the Thrive for Three, and it's just so wonderful to have a community that supports our youngest learners. I know you know all about this. And I would love to see the momentum continue after three and have a universal preschool. I'm hoping sometime in the future we can have a discussion about that. I think it would go a long way in closing that achievement gap. We had our first wellness meeting of the year and heard a recap of the Smarter Lunchroom movement, which included funding for digital menu boards. And there's interest in Meatless Mondays. And we are continuing our CalFresh Thursdays when the food served is raised or grown within 200 miles of Santa Cruz. There have been a number of requests for gluten-free menu items, and Amy's working on providing some options. Our goal this year is to participate in the Healthier U.S. School Challenge, and participating schools get recognized nationally and can earn monetary awards. And I want to say that I've heard a lot of positive feedback about our State of the Schools mailing. Mm-hmm. And it was well done. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, I really have nothing to report, but I don't want anybody to have a heart attack, so I do have one request.
Don't let us down.
I just worry about everybody out there, you know. I have been wondering for a while, and I keep forgetting to ask, whether it might be possible for us to have the new police chief visit us. Could we invite him to visit us sometime? Because I know we've had that in the past, and I haven't had a chance to meet him yet. Mm-hmm. I don't know about anybody else, but I think it'd be great to hear something about what he thinks.
Really appreciated his partnership and commitment to schools.
So that's it.
Nancy, I'll just submit my report to you.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. So our next item is approval of the minutes. Is there a motion to approve the minutes of the special meeting of October 11th? That was our board candidates meeting.
Move approval.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? No. Okay. Approval of the minutes for the regular meeting of October the 18th?
Move approval.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 And our minutes from our special board study session on November 1st.
Move approval.
Second.
Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Okay. So our next item is the consent agenda, and these items are generally considered non-controversial, may be passed in one roll call motion. Patty, I see that your light is on. So you have a question for an item for clarifying questions, or you want to pull it for discussion?
I'd like to pull the, and forgive me, I didn't have a lot of time to get through my board of parents weekend, so we were gone. But I have a few items to be pulled. I think they could be discussed and then voted on.
Can you tell
8.1.3, the purchase orders. 8.1.5, the budget transfers. 8.1.9, the bond oversight. 8.1.11, a job description. 8.1.12.3.2, the school site solutions.
CEQA?
Yeah, the CEQA contract.
What was that last one?
8.1, it's
8.1.12.3.2, school site solutions and the CEQA contract.
Jeremy, do you have other items that you want to pull for discussion, or you have clarifying questions? Oh, you're good? Okay, Cynthia.
I'm sorry, were there just four items?
No,
five.
I'm missing one, thank you.
Cindy, sorry.
I just had a clarifying question on 8.1.11, the job description.
Okay, well, we're pulling that for discussion. So.
Right, I agree with that.
Okay, are there any other questions, comments? Okay, so are there comments from the public on any of these items that are not been pulled? Okay, so we're going to go ahead and ask for a motion to approve the remaining items.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, this is a roll call student recommendation.
Aye.
Cynthia.
I'm sorry.
Aye.
Okay, first item for discussion, 8.1.3, the purchase orders, quotes, and bids.
So I am reading some of these around our bond measure, and we have the Soquel High, a bill for $36,000 for an aquatic center. And then we have from the Bel Air Group a bill for $13,000 for the aquatic center. I'm just curious as to why there's such a large discrepancy on that particular matter.
Chairman, my feeling is I suspect that it's progress Patty, relative to the overall cost. I don't have the exact I can get back to the explicit details, but sure,
I'm sorry, I was gone all weekend.
I'm sorry,
this started. But my reasoning behind it is because each school site has a budget, and we don't have a reconciliation. At this point, we may be working towards it. But I'd like to start keeping an eye on it, because I'd hate to, me personally speaking, how the board decides upon it, to get to a point where, you know, as these costs escalate and we have to make tough decisions to say, wow, did we really have that? So that leads me to some questions also on the purchase orders. I see that we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, six different purchase orders for DCA Architects. They're four different pieces. They come to roughly $147,000. Now, I know we're not engaging with them. Is it normal that we're being billed in November for work done in April?
These items were discussed with them in terms of the work that they produce for us. So these invoices that were generated all within the contract we have with them and for services that they generated to us. So it's not typical, but it took us some time to have some dialogue around the invoices that were generated relative to the services that were provided to us. So it is atypical, but this is what we are moving forward with in terms of paying with them.
Okay, and
we had to negotiate.
In one of them, there is a listing, you know, we show them to be, for example, confirmation for payment for a pool project, bond measure A, and then it will list a site. But we have the district listed, and I'm not sure if we have a, but though I know everything comes through the district, can you please help me out in understanding in the board approved facilities master plan, did we have a budget on just district needs?
Can you tell me specifically?
So that would be, if you were to go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 items down on page 36, or what's known as the second page of the purchase orders, there's a $52,000 confirming payment, professional service, multi-project overhead, and then they list it as a district site. And my piece to that is, until we have a reconciliation, did we have a budget item in our facilities master plan for the district?
So if I'm referring to the one that that 50,000, I don't see district overhead. I see
the second column.
We might have
number eight, not number seven.
I'm on paper.
Right, you're absolutely. So this is this had to do with a contract for services we contracted with the DCA to provide for us to do program management types of services, which were district wide. I'm sorry, I was trying to find the exact things, but your question is, do we capture that as district? And was there something in our facility master plan that called out district cost? I don't know the explicit answer to your question, Patty, but it's not atypical for...
Okay, I just want to have the conversation around it, because this is where some of the confusion comes from.
Okay.
I mean, it's, yeah. I'm sure we'll work through this.
Okay.
We have there's lots going on, I understand.
The types of services, just for the board member, the types of services, they were contractual. It was in the contract to have DCA provide these program management type services. It spelled out the different services they would do. And that type of thing is not atypical for boards and districts to have those types of services provided, which are district-wide types of program management services.
Okay, and I think what I hear Patty saying or asking is, was there, when we made a facilities master plan, was that built in, the cost, kind of the operational cost, the planning cost, was that built in separately from individual schools'
right.
costs? Was there a single pot? And I don't believe there is in the master plan.
I mean, there's some things that I don't think the master plan addressed, and I believe that would be one. I have to go back a little bit explicitly.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, I
didn't bring it up a little bit earlier. I just want to be having these conversations to help you understand how I think, and
sure.
and the board to understand how I think when I'm approaching these, because we know these are great expenses, and we know things are going to have to shift, and there'll be some tough decisions, but... The public gets kind of caught onto where they got left behind in numbers. So I'd like to be as transparent as possible by having these conversations. We can, you know, do the legwork to say, hey, this is where the board moved and why these decisions were made. Take it that way.
So just, we're working on a clear budget explanation that can be updated with each board meeting. We met today to talk about what that looks like, and we want to get that up on the website. There is a website up. We're making adjustments to it to make it as clear as we possibly can for all of our stakeholders and for staff. And our goal is to have that done in the next couple of weeks.
Would it be appropriate to follow up to that question?
Yes.
So I guess if I follow what you're saying, so one remaining question is that, for instance, on this $52,000, will it be, when it's actually charged just accounts for account, will it be prorated to all the sites, or is there an overarching programmatic piece of the budget to which it would be charged?
That's
an outstanding question.
There are options that you can prorate these types of costs,
uh-huh.
but this is general types of overhead, and we're looking at a budget that's going to have an item called out for general overhead types of costs.
So we could look forward to seeing that
that's
detail. Thank you.
Jeremy.
Yeah, I got to say that it's remarkable to me in a negative way that 1 year after the bond has passed, we don't have a running tab for each school of money spent, so that if a parent or a community member from a particular school wants to see how have my tax dollars been spent on this school, we just show them the tab. I mean, it's just going to be 10 sites, and it's going to be, you know, dates and money spent. And I keep hearing that we're working on it, we'll get it up and running, it's going to happen soon. It doesn't make sense not to have this done. And it's frustrating because without that, it's hard to know what's going on. So I really think it's in our interest to have this up and running as soon as possible. I think we're way, way, way behind the curve in terms of messaging, which is a part of public relations and politics that's half the game right there. And I just don't understand this because we've been asking for this in one way or the other for a long time now. Show us a running record for each site money spent so that when someone comes to us about Bayview, we can say, okay, we spent $900,000 on a roof and we spent, you know. So I appreciate these questions. Thank you.
Patty, did you have other items within this item to discuss?
I did.
Item 8.1.3.
Yep.
I just want to make sure Patty had all her questions asked before it went to others. Did you have other items, or are you done?
No, on this particular, on the purchase order.
Yes.
That piece is what
okay.
I was curious.
Jeremy, do you have other items on the purchase orders?
Oh, no, I had one on
okay.
Are there? Can I just ask a question?
Yes.
Can Jeremy's request be in the minutes, please?
Yeah, she's
noted.
So let me just clarify then. I think our previous agreement is, Jeremy, are you asking me to include in the minutes for the record that you are asking for this?
I believe I've asked for this before. Is it called officially a reconciliation? I don't really know.
So, Jeremy, I don't feel like I've clearly heard that you've asked for that
okay.
before, so I appreciate having the clarity of that
right
now.
I apologize.
I'd like to ask for direction from the board. We are moving forward with that. Would you like us to continue moving forward with that?
Yes.
Okay.
And if possible, if we could get an update in terms of... it's just part of transparency. You know, we're talking about not quite $250 million. And if we see it from the point of view of citizens, they want to know where that money's going. And how much have we spent so far, for example, total? I don't know.
Are there any questions from the public on this item? Okay. Are there any further comments or questions from the board? So is there a motion to approve item 8.1.3?
So moved.
Second.
This is a roll call student recommendation.
Aye.
Thank
you. Okay, item 8.1.5, budget transfers.
So I had some confusion when I looked on registers that are closed out on 10/26/17, on page 1 of 2, and then on 10/26/17, page 1 of 3. I see that we have Button Clifford and Associates, which is, if I am correct, BCA, which I was asking about in purchase orders. So these are items that have already been paid. So we have the billing yet to pay them in the purchase orders, and what I see here has been paid for a total of $147,000, so almost $300,000 is spent in that particular direction. It's item number, it's check number 922404, and that's page 1 of 3 on the check register from 10/26/17. And then again, on the register, it's 922336. These are in addition to what I'm seeing from previous. So it would be purchase orders are still yet to be paid, and these have already been paid.
Correct.
Okay. I just wanted to bring that up because that's almost $300,000 worth of dollars there. And that
Point of clarification, the BCA, is that what you said?
Well, Button, Clifford, and Associates, I do believe, is BCA.
That's correct.
So they are listed on the register one way and under this the other, but those two combined are almost $300,000 worth of.
Can you explain what your question means?
I just wanted to be sure that I wasn't seeing the purchase order prior, which says that dollars, which according to the cover page, you know, the formal process and need to be brought forward for approval, that when I'm doing the math, when I'm reconciling myself, that the math is reflective that this has already been paid and we're still going to pay that price again. So we're almost at $300,000.
Are there any comments from the board? Any questions or comments from the public on this item? Any further comments? Okay, so do I have a motion to approve item 8.1.5, the budget transfers?
Move approval.
Second. This is a roll call. Student recommendation?
Aye.
Aye.
Item 8.1.9, approve the bond oversight committee member.
I'd like to thank you for bringing forward Mr. Wersch. I know he's a parent of two students at Soquel High School, and his wife is a teacher at Galt High School. It does say that, I know that it's been quite unfortunate because one of our longtime supporters of school is no longer with us, but the first thing that the Oversight Committee asks for, it says Proposition 39 requires that the committee have at least 7 members. And I believe at this point we have 5?
We have 6.
Okay, so it's Mr. Wersch, it's Mr. Parker, it's Mr. Iglesia, it's Marianne Campbell.
It's Colleen Harrison.
Colleen Harrison.
Parker has. I'm forgetting someone.
Isn't the roster in the book?
Not of the entirety of, this is for the...
Just the one person.
Yeah, so just the one.
We're up to 6, but
we
wish.
Are at 6, as I know.
Okay. And I can't remember off the top of my head.
So the requirement is a minimum on Prop 39, and I'm very thankful for those who will take this work on. It's serious work. I just want to know, as a district, when we bring these forward, you know, we had a timeline that we have far exceeded in order to do this. What type of independent training do we offer for these people who are stepping up so that they have the opportunity to understand their role and their best practices that they can bring forward, because they really are an oversight for all of us, reflecting the board to the public.
So our Pat will hold her first meeting with the BOC in late November, I believe, the last week in November. And he'll review the bylaws with them, explain the process and their role. And the next meeting will be with our auditors with them. So our auditors will present expenditures and all of the materials to them that has happened to date. Am I correct? Pat?
So I'm not sure. A community member had brought up that there is an actual organization. It's called the California League of Bond Oversight Committees. They offer services such that these committee members can learn more about independent training and what is allowable for them to do, both back and forth. You know, there are things they are definitely not allowed to do within the preview of being on the committee, but there are things that they can ask for. And I would hope that the board would consider, along with approving this, that we also offer a link to the website or some other training so that the committee can be a committee that actually has some teeth.
What was the name of the organization?
It's called CALBOC, C-A-L-B-O-C, and it's the California League of Bond Oversight Committee.
Thank you.
Anybody have any aversion to that if I were to make a motion that we approve Mr. Wersch and that we offer the opportunity for our bond oversight committee to contact Kelbach and engage in training should they want it.
Do you know what the cost of the training is? Did you say it was free?
Free.
Okay.
Actually, that's not true because they do hold a yearly meeting in Sacramento where they'll have a keynote speaker and some different things. But they have a website which is informational, and that is of no cost. So that would be an opportunity for the oversight committee to do a little labor. But if they'd like to go, I think it would be, you know, a day in Sacramento, and that might be an expenditure the board may want to consider or not. Entirely up to the board, but I would like to offer up that when we approve this.
So are you making a motion that we would only approve Richard Wersch upon approval of this participation in this training, or can you make a second?
No, I think that I would like to approve Mr. Wersch and all that have been, but I would like to just give the opportunity to have this conversation that these tools are out there for our community to help better our work. And if they'd like to be part of it, that we consider, if they ask for a stipend to whatever it may be, that we as a board may at that time consider it.
So we can put that in the...
Could you shorten that for Mike and Nancy?
What if we just... and I can copy you on this. We can put that out as a resource to them as a website. We sent out to them already information on the bylaws and other aspects of it. Of the bond, we sent them the facilities master plan. We could send them that as a resource as well.
Thank you.
Sheila, do you have a comment?
Question about that.
Is this in fact a part of your motion, or is this a separate item now?
Well, I think it can be a separate item. It doesn't have to be dependent upon. I appreciate Superintendent Monroe bringing that up.
Okay, thank you.
Did you have a question?
About what?
Patty's asking.
Yeah. I think maybe I missed it, because it seems to me like you probably talked about it. We're having a problem getting a taxpayer organization person because there is no taxpayer organization. So does the board need to go back and make the bylaws more?
No, it's a requirement of law that we continue to try. So we've sent it to the neighboring county's taxpayer organization requesting whether or not they'd want to participate. So what we've done is done registered mail connection with the closest possible option.
And is it the law that says it has to be 7, or did we say it had to be 7?
So it's the law, it's Ed Code.
My understanding, too, is, as a superintendent said, we did reach out to them. There wasn't a taxpayer association in Santa Cruz County. So when we amended our bylaws, it was to enable us to go outside the county to ask for a taxpayer association representative. That communication was sent. I know that it's not atypical that districts have a challenge getting someone from a taxpayer association on the oversight committee. And my understanding is, too, and I can go back and validate this for all of you with council, that as long as the district has made an effort, the superintendent said, to advise an organization that there's a spot we're seeking somebody to participate, that that we've done our due diligence and we're meeting with the spirit of the law. But if you want me to get you something in concrete that says we're not in violation of the 7 members, then
I take your word for it. But at some point, if we can't get it, is the spirit of the law more like, well, we get something else, so we have 7, or is it, if we can't get it, we can't get it?
But the language that you have is you hold it vacant for a taxpayer association.
Okay. That seems bizarre, but I'll go for it.
People have not jumped at the opportunity to participate on this committee. I have had lots of conversations with lots of people, and was fortunate that Jeremy was able to convince his neighbor and my fellow Rotarian to jump on board. And we've been having lots of conversations with lots of people to try to.
But if we don't have a taxpayers association, it's a little bit crazy making to say we're going to keep looking for that which we don't have. I mean,
you have to continue to make the
effort. That's what the law says to do.
You have to continue to make the effort.
Mm-hmm.
To fill it.
Okay.
Patty, do you have further comment?
I do, because what I'd like to read is in our application to the people who have handed it out. Sheila, I hope this clarifies it, and it makes me a little bit more confused from the answer. But it says Proposition 39 requires that the committee have at least seven members. Mm-hmm. That is the first part of the sentence. So the at the least seven members, with one member representing each of five categories. So we could have a committee up until how many members we decide. We should have at least seven, and five of them should reflect what has been asked for. Mm-hmm. Now we have six, one of which is not. So we could go to seven, and should we find a taxpayer, be eight and be at the minimum covered according to what we have asked the people to sign up for. This, to me, I think we can just do a better job. We can do more than minimum. Since I hear that I would be more than happy to shake the bushes to bring people forward. We as a board decided to let them that they would have to go through the superintendent in order to bring it to us, but I think this is really important.
So do you know of a taxpayer organization that would have someone to
provide? I will do some.
Can you contact the people that offer the training? Perhaps they could recommend somebody in the area.
I just really wanted to bring it forward. I didn't want to be...
I want to move on this because this is only...
Well, I just want to clarify. She's not saying... She's saying maybe we should have an extra category.
She just wants to get the minimum that's in Prop 39. She's not adding
Prop 39 says minimum seven. Okay. And then within that, five have to be within specifics.
Right.
We keep hearing that we don't have a specific, so we're at six. It's like we can bring seven, and then once we find the specific...
That's exactly what I just said.
Yes.
That's what you're saying.
Well,
so that's a little different.
Okay, are there other comments from members of the board on this item? Are there any comments from the public? Do you guys know any PAC taxpayer organizations in the area?
Let's start one.
Okay, so the item before us is to approve the application of Richard Warsh as a bond oversight committee member. And we've put comment regarding the training into the minutes. So move it. Is there a second?
Second.
This is a roll call. Daniela?
Aye.
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 Aye. Okay. Item 8.1.11, the revised classified job description for the project coordinator.
Can you speak to this one? No.
Let's look at his question first.
I was going to have...
Oh, Jeremy's question.
First of all, I'd like to preface my remarks by saying that everything we do when talking about the bond, in terms of protocols and committee members and composition, is very important. Because we're talking about an amount of money three times our yearly operating budget. And given the fact that Santa Cruz City Schools has already... designated over $300 million worth of needs, or identified, I should say, and this bond does not cover that, we may in fact need to go to the public for another chunk of change, substantially. So we need to get this right from the beginning, and as I said previously, I think we have a long way to go. So my remarks here are not intended to be personal in any way, shape, or form. I think that Trevor works incredibly hard, and the times that I've worked with him, he knows his stuff well, and I commend him. Same with Pat and same with Chris. I mean, we're talking to people for whom a 55-hour work week is a short week and perhaps unimaginably long weeks stretch beyond 70 hours. But that being said, I think it is not in the interest of this district to have agenda item 8.1.11 on the consent agenda, because I think it's a crucial piece to the bond that I'd like to see discussed at some length. The way I read this, frankly, is that we're looking to find someone who will do the work that Trevor has done. And then there's an implication here not stated that Ben Trevor would be freed up to do the bond 24/7. I hope not, but I'm unclear about this. If we're deciding that we need to spend more money to have someone be full-time on the bond, I'd like a full-on agendized item so that we can discuss that, so we can discuss a budget, so we can discuss how it would affect other parts of our budget, and so that we can talk about a process to interview that person, and again, be transparent. So I'm confused by this item, and I'm confused by the amount of money it would cost, who this, do we already, and then what the implications are for people already in the employment of Santa Cruz City Schools, specifically, I think, Trevor. So I'd like clarification is what I'm asking. Thank you.
So, Jeremy, I'd like to start with, in my monthly meetings with trustees for the last several months, I've been talking about how we're going to work and organize the bond structures and who's going to provide what support roles, and that we needed to add some additional positions. So this has been an ongoing, I've been sharing that information. It hasn't been for board discussion, but told you we'd be bringing these forward. Also, in our communication over the last few years, and our original intended structure ended up getting shifting. We all know that our intended structure and our intended management plan changed. And we've had one other position that we, a finance position that we, to date, haven't been able to fill yet, a bond finance position that we've had that was approved by the board, I believe, in August. And we've been trying to fill, and we've had two rounds of interviews for. But I think it's probably best that I let Pat and Jeremy, or Pat and Trevor talk to it. I'm surprised that it's a surprise because it's been an ongoing conversation every month as we've been meeting and talking.
It's not that it's a surprise that we need to do something. It's a surprise that when we decide to do something, it's put on a consent agenda and not, we don't have a lot of background. For example, you've just given me information about the fact that August, we've been trying to find someone for a different position. It is in our interest to be transparent, and I'm not arguing that we're not being transparent on purpose, but rather there's a pattern here. It is in our interest to be transparent and talk to the public in an agendized item manner about our steps that we're taking. And in terms of background, maybe I've forgotten that in August we floated a position and haven't been able to find it. I'm just, again, from the point of view of the public, and I've said this before, tax bills are out. And if you live in the city of Santa Cruz, your assessed property is for $850,000, which is the average. You're paying $1,100 towards Santa Cruz City Schools alone in property taxes. So that's great. I would pay more if it was up to me for education on many levels. But we've got to present these things more clearly with more background information, lest people think that we're not being completely transparent. So I'm confused by this, and so you're bringing new information to the table about a different position. Let's just do this right.
Okay, I'd like to have Pat address Jeremy's
Absolutely.
Comments before, Patty, before I go to you.
Jeremy, I want to step back for a moment for everyone's benefit to talk about this from a very global perspective. And I welcome Trevor, who does this day in and day out, but I also welcome Trevor's commentary from a global perspective.
Great.
And when we look at how districts manage this from an administrative perspective, there are different schools of thought. I'm welcome Dr. Reyna's experience with as well. I know she's got firsthand experience in managing this. And I mentioned the term program management a short while ago. And much of this, what this role is doing, is program management types of tasks and support. And when districts look at program management for bonds, districts take a lot of different approaches. Some districts hire outside firms to do program management. Some districts hire construction management firms, but a subset of construction management is program management. Some districts do program management with their architectural partners to do the types of information you spoke to earlier, Jeremy, which is really a monthly account of expenditures that supports additional levels of support, which I concur with you, we absolutely critically need. And as the superintendent said, we've had some starts and some efforts to do that tactical level types of work. And we've been met with some challenges in terms of, you know, recruiting people into these roles. As the superintendent said too, we had an initial plan to have some program management. We had that underway, and then we shifted gears. And so along with that, we tried a different tactic, and we've been unsuccessful in bringing people in and hiring those roles. So this is yet another variance from that. I agree with you completely that we need to be fully transparent, that we need to do this accounting and reporting out of expenditures, and that should be a routine budget report item that the board has. And if I step back,
I don't mean to interrupt you, but please. What you're giving me is incredible background, which, you know, the public needs to see right here on background. This is really good. So they're, you know, this is the whole point of it. I really appreciate you speaking this, but the point is, from the public's point of view, $210 million, $1,100 extra per year for that $850,000 average appraised parcel in Santa Cruz. They need to know all this, Pat. And again, man, you're working 60 hours a week, brother. That's a lot of time, maybe more. I don't know how you guys do it, but what I'm saying is, okay, so please continue.
So, no, please. It's a great job. But again, this is the backdrop to the global perspective, and then we're getting into some of the action items that you're talking about.
Yes.
What we have in front of you tonight, which is an action item to produce that type of information, which we are in desperate need of doing. Okay, so I hear what you're saying, too, in terms of the process piece.
Yes.
Again, the options in terms of how districts approach this reporting, this support piece for people like Trevor, that there are options. Just a little bit of detail. I would concur with your commentary from my own personal experience, Jeremy, in the not only remarkable work ethic, but the tremendous expertise and the insatiable need to contribute that Trevor has. It's very rare. So a lot of this model that we looked at for our district is centered around that incredible resource that we have resident in our district. Some districts don't have the great fortune that we have of someone with a background who's been a DSA inspector, who's done consulting for all these other things. So looking at the resource you have within your organization, you build from that. And again, the efforts we've had underway have been to support that and work around that and free up his time, but we've been met with some challenges. And that part, like you're saying, that's not been a broadcast, summarized thing. As we're trying to do the tactical things to get the support in place to do the reporting, to free up Trevor's time so he can get immersed in some of the discussions regarding projects and designs and blueprints. I guess, I don't know, for what it's worth, again, districts take a lot of different approaches to this. We are having conversations tomorrow with a contractor who has done both program management and construction management services for districts. That's a contract that the board approved. That's also another supplementary support resource we have that we're having. We signed a contract with that person. And in addition, we have conversations lined up with multiple architects tomorrow to also talk about the exact same thing you were talking about earlier, Jeremy, which is that reporting piece. We had someone we had on board to do that. We shifted gears. Now we're back to conversations with a construction firm who has program management and construction management background. And we're having conversations with architectural firms to do the exact point you're talking about. And I will tell you for myself, that what we talked about in open session was, and you have frustration, I can share with you there's frustration that we have as well, too, that we want to get this information done and report to you, because what we've talked about doing is the last presentation the board saw was a phased project report, and that was to align time with projects for our public. Mm-hmm. And that was done with a firm who we no longer have on board. Mm-hmm. So you're right, we have to do that. And what we said is after that phase project thing was done, the next thing we're going to produce for the board is a listing of projects and a budget. And those budgets, which we talked about too, is there a variance between the master plan and the current market rate we're seeing for projects? So the boards that we're talking about for each project and the sites for each project, they're having a lot of conversations, Trevor, have with each of the architectural firms to develop that budget. And our discussion has been in December to have that information come forward to the board in that listing, which builds that transparency that you're talking about, Jeremy. And in addition to that, this is part of the resource, along with the resource you approved of a contract with a contractor to also potentially provide that resource to you. So we're in this mode of creating this. So we have that data, we have that transparency, we have that visibility to it. And so it's been in motion, albeit it's not been a very seamless, smooth ride, because we had a change in plan. So I hope that helps put some context around it. I may have said too much, but I'm trying to give some context. I don't know if I answered your explicit question. I'm trying to share information.
I don't know if I'm more clear or more confused at this point.
I'm happy to go
through. No, I mean, and that may not be a bad thing.
That's all right. It's good to know.
Cindy, you have your light on. No, go ahead.
Oh, proceed? Okay, go ahead.
Clarify.
Thank you.
The key question I had on this was how does this project coordinator position fit into the current overall staffing of the bond program? And I was a little confused as to operationally where this person would fit in and what they would do, particularly regarding the bookkeeping and financial record keeping piece. So I just was looking for a little more clarity on where this position fits into our current organizational structure.
Trevor, you wanted to speak to that?
Thank you.
I hope I'm clear.
I'll get into the details a little bit.
Thank you.
So right now, as Pat alluded to, we have difficulties producing stuff because we just don't have the staff.
Mm-hmm.
So we're way understaffed. This position helps fill a couple of gaps.
Okay.
One for accounting, in paying bills and processing POs and all that kind of stuff for a portion of our accounting, which I'm working with Greg on Pat to figure out exactly what that workload is, because currently the accounts department is short bodies. The other portion, we're roughly looking at 60-40, so that's 40%. 60% is to support the bond program directly. That is producing POs, creating the account codes, managing those account codes, managing the invoicing, keeping that running tab on the budget from a across-the-board perspective, where every single entry affects the end. You guys have passed, approved the purchasing of some software to do that. As soon as this person comes on board, they'll be trained on that software, along with myself and Greg, and another volunteer, so that we have some corporate memory if something happens to that individual. They'll also be managing contracts and payments for architects, contractors, consultants, state agencies. They'll be doing basically monitoring all finances that deal with bond payment. They'll be producing some of those reports that the state requires, probably enable the architects to produce those ongoing reports that will be part of the board meetings. They'll also be doing calendar coordination and kind of, in a lot of respects, my personal assistant for helping keep me coordinated with all those consultants and architects and meetings and sites. Also, probably a huge part of it's going to be the liaison with the principal, so that we can coordinate not only our internal meetings, design and that type of construction stuff, but at the site and that community engagement, that site engagement. How do we do that? What's the schedule? Do we conflict? How can we embed ourselves in some of the existing things? So it's a big coordination component, as well as a hugely important component.
Thank you. Patty?
Thanks, Pat. I am happy that this discussion has come up. I
realize that, you know, we had an approach in one direction as a board where we were given information and had gone with a firm. And then we shifted, and where I think my confusion is that once we shifted, we did not bring that same mechanism forward to say, how would we like to do this? So I understand at the level everybody's working, it feels a bit piecemeal to me personally. I think it would be reasonable that we consider putting this on the agenda, not taking away from the work that anybody's done, but why we hire someone and train him to do something you already know how to do when we have the opportunity to possibly hire someone who has been in charge of a $200 million budget and has experience with this, and do that so that the needs, because there's never enough time in the day for those working on the $68 million budget, then it's what we had went for before the shift, and after the shift we were never given a vote or an option to say how we've gotten here. We just had piecemeal discussions. I think it's something to consider. You have a $200 million budget on top of a $70 million budget. Now you have $270 million to manage, and we're only picking up two positions. There are people who do this. You know, you talked about options. There are program managers, and there are specific schools where people learn to do these large projects and do them. It might be something for the board to consider. That's okay. All I'd like to say.
Can I just share, Patty, but our conversation, Trevor and I have a meeting tomorrow with Bogart Construction. So Bogart Construction has that background that's what I believe you're referring to, and so that's because they do both program management and construction management.
But then why would we, then as a board or as myself, if I were shopping, why am I buying two? So that would allow for them to step into the position that needs to happen and Trevor to have his position that we seem to be looking to bring a position to. The Bogart, as I understood it, was just a consultation for you to stay within some parameters. This is obviously a very large job, and I've been hearing, and where my concern comes to is I want to be able to help in my position here to give you real tools, not piecemeal tools, because I think we're going to be penny-wise and pound-foolish in this direction, to have somebody really have the helm, to give us the overarching. I'm a year into it, and I don't have a website that... We have pieces of the website. I've been on it now. We don't have a complete committee. None of this is anything that I think anyone is doing with malice. It's just things that I believe we can do better, and as a board, we can support bringing someone in. We've never had that conversation. It's not been on the agenda since we shifted.
Well, we're having a conversation now.
Yeah. That's why it came. So that's why I asked for it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
So the position we're hiring is not a replacement for that. We need still, whether we hire a CM, a PM, an AM, it doesn't matter. We still need someone to pay bills, coordinate calendars, that's in-house. We can't have an outside consultant paying our bills. So this position is needed no matter which direction you go. Or we still may need additional internal people to do that based on the volume of work we do. They may be temporary in year 2, 3, 5, but you can't have outside consultants coming in and running your bills.
Sheila.
So I would just like to, and I think this is kind of Jeremy's point, I would like to request that this is a whole item. We could have, and it could have been an item on the agenda, and we wouldn't have spent as much time on it probably because we would have all been more prepared. When an issue like this comes that is a change issue, and it's a large issue, can we put it on the agenda? It makes me, and I think this is what Jeremy's saying, it makes me unnerved to have it on the consent agenda because I never would have seen it as complex as I see it now. And now I feel like, well, it wasn't planned. The agenda team didn't get to plan.
I'll make a comment, Sheila, because it was on the agenda, and we had such a full agenda that because I knew Chris had been having conversations with trustees during the month about upcoming items, that we moved it to consent. The information is just as full on consent as it should be on a regular agenda. So if it's not full, then that's a different issue. But that's why it got moved. So I will take responsibility for moving it.
So I'm just specifically saying in regard to the bond.
Okay, we're having a conversation now. So
yes, can we avoid this happening in this way and put it on the agenda. And I don't think that that is just you guys' job. I think it's the board's job when Chris is giving us the update to say, I think this is an agenda item.
Well, okay, so the issue at hand is that we are behind in getting projects going. We're behind in things like websites and other things that people are wanting. And if we push any more further assistance to the team off, I'm concerned that we're just going to be behind again. So we are discussing the item tonight. I've heard loud and clear from everyone that you would like to have more information up front, everything agendized. We'll try to move more
everything,
things. Everything that's big,
things
try
like
to
that.
Move off the consent agenda. But we do have an item before us, which
right.
is a recommendation to approve
right.
this position. And I can't make the recommendation. I'm wondering if there's another board member who's ready to make a recommendation this evening.
No.
Jeremy, do you have further comment?
Yes.
Okay, I can go ahead. You can talk.
Thank you. I have some follow-up questions. Would this person, would this position, this person would be reporting to you?
Yes.
Okay, thank you for that. Also, approximately, salary range 39. Approximately. What are we looking at?
It's slightly above my regular secretary's, but that's not the top. So
$50,000 range.
I don't think it's 60. I think it's the 50 range.
$50,000 range. All right.
The administrative assistant range.
It, what you're saying is that whatever route, am I reading this, am I getting this correctly? Whatever route the board chooses to go, whether we hire an outside project manager or not, or make more room in-house to free up more time for Trevor so he becomes the de facto project manager, we would still need this position.
Mm-hmm.
Do you concur?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Cynthia?
I would be ready to recommend approval of this job description.
And I would second.
So further comment?
Yes.
I would say I found the range is $23.53 to $30 an hour.
Go ahead, Jeremy.
I would ask for a friendly amendment to that. I would accept that proposal with the friendly amendment that by our next school board meeting, which will happen on
December 13th,
we have an agendized item in which we, and the agendized item is bond update personnel, and we have a discussion about what we need beyond this particular position to move into high gear on this bond, whether it's hiring more people or, yes.
So,
so
Jeremy,
that would be my friendly amendment.
Can I ask us not to pair those things and just keep it separate and vote on this, and then let's talk about adding that as an agenda item that's separate from this particular thing?
Can you make a second motion? Would you be
sure,
comfortable doing
that?
That?
Sure. Thank you.
Are there comments or questions from the public on this item?
So I'm not adding the friendly amendment?
No, we're going to make a second. So I have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Oh, I'm sorry. I've lost track of time. Yes, student.
Aye.
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 Thank you.
Thank you.
And then I'd like to follow up with what Jeremy has requested, and I believe we can make that a part of the bond update already scheduled for December 13th.
Okay.
Okay, item 8.1.12.3.2, this contract with the Site Solutions regarding the CEQA.
Just two things, and they're short.
one. Thank you. As I read this contract, I was concerned because there is a piece that we're using people who are specialized, but occasionally they come across pieces where they'll need to hire out,
yes.
And then that would be at the cost of the hire out and 10%. And I was concerned until I read the next paragraph, which the reimbursable expenses, they put a cap within it. So I was happy to see that, and I'm hoping to see that in all contracts. Thank you very much. But one thing I did notice is that of all the services, they have CEQA work for all schools but Harbor. So it made me think, did we have a separate CEQA because we started differently? And that was my only question. Thank you very much. Anybody else? Oh, Trevor was nodding, yes. No question.
Yes,
thank you. He said yes.
Okay, I'm sorry, you said yes?
To having a separate CEQA consultant for Harvard.
Yeah.
Because they started up on
because they started at a different time.
Are there any comments or questions from the board on this item? Are there any comments from the public on this item? Do I have a motion to approve?
Move approval.
Second.
I'm sorry, who was the first?
Thank you.
Claudia, then Patty.
Aye.
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 Aye. Thank you.
Okay, so our next item is a reading of the gifts, which Sheila will do for us.
The board acknowledges and appreciates the following gifts. Bayview Elementary School, Sean Danforth and Danielle Lewis donated $5,500, $1,500 for the classroom of Ms. Givedo and Le Chaput, and I hope I said that right, and $4,000 to be used at Principal Garcia's discretion. Santa Cruz High School, the Unglade family of Santa Cruz has donated $12,500 to the school on behalf of the Wilson family. This welcome gift will be used to increase technology access for students and support the professional development of teachers' technology integration in classrooms. Thank you.
Report of actions taken in closed session.
The Board of Trustees took action on certificated, classified, and management leaves, retirements, resignations, and appointments. The Board of Trustees conferred with GSCFT regarding labor negotiations. The Board of Trustees conferred regarding the property at 255 Swift Street.
Item number one, do you have an update or was there any information on public employee dismissal?
There was
no information. Thank you so much.
Okay. So our first item for, staff report. Marianne, staff report.
I'm pinch hitting for Assistant Superintendent Frank Wells, who is attending a Silicon Valley Education Foundation event with our Education Foundation board members. And I'd like to introduce our Director of Curriculum, Instruction, and Assessment Elementary, Marianne Robb, who's going to be talking to us. This is an LCAP update on an LCAP-funded program. We have these throughout the year. She's going to be discussing the roles of our school community coordinators.
Part of our LCAP, of course, as you know, goes towards funding our excellent school community coordinators. We have school community coordinators at many of our sites, depending on the enrollment at those sites. I'm going to just start very quickly going back and recapping a little bit of the last year we had a rather lengthy presentation on our English Learner Roadmap. I'm not going to repeat it here, but a few key essential points that guide our program for English language learners. One, that it's our responsibility to meet the needs of our English learners in our district. That given the right support, they can achieve high degrees of success. That their home language and culture are assets that must be cultivated. And finally, all educators in our system are responsible for our English language learners. To meet those ends, we have four district priorities. I'm not going to repeat them all, but I want to focus tonight on number two, meeting the needs of the whole child. That priority is divided into two parts. One is to make sure that school is an inclusive and welcoming place for our English learners, of all backgrounds. And secondly, that we families increase their capacity to be support their children, make informed decisions about their child's education, to inform us on how we're spending the LCAP dollars, to make sure that we are being responsive educational agency for their children. Now, those goals, actually, those priorities have, or those two parts of that priority have many goals. I'm not going to get into them now, but again, we've done tremendous work last year in supporting our undocumented workers. I want to thank the undocumented students. I want to thank the board for the action they've taken on that. We have schools with community coordinators. We coordinate on social-emotional learning, tier one practices. These are all to make sure that school is a welcoming place for our English language learners. And again, the second part of that priority is that families increase their capacity to support their children to make informed decisions. The goals in that part, again, parent education. Parents are equal partners. It's not a one-way street. We don't tell parents how to be better parents. We need to learn from parents. We need to learn from them how we can better serve the needs of their children. Empower families to take part and be active, not just in the in roles that might be comfortable to them, but actually empower parents to take leadership roles in our district, in our schools. Listen to parents and students to how to create a system that works with our ELs. Collaborate with student services again to make sure that we're connecting them to school, equitable access to full service community, health, etc. Regularly communicate. That means, you know, sending everything home, translating into Spanish. You know, most of our English learners, of course, do speak Spanish, so we do have the capacity to translate almost everything that we send home. And we have the obligation to do that to for the district, for any school over 50 children. We need to be sending that information and translating for kids. And again, reclassification, A&G, graduation, very important. Information that we're communicating. So these are the goals outlined in our English Learner Roadmap. Interestingly, there's the state of California has an English Learner Roadmap which has very similar goals in it that is going to be unveiled this year. Our school community coordinators are really important in achieving these goals. Right now we have school community coordinators. We have 0.75 school community coordinators at Bayview, De La Viega, and Galt. Monarch has a 0.5, or just under a 0.5, and that's Elisa, Rosario, Victoria, and Miriam. At our middle schools, we have Faye at Ransom 40 Middle School, and we have actually on Olivia Santa Cruz's position is vacant right now. She's had to leave her position, she's actually leaving the area. But Faye is full-time at Ransom 40 Middle Schools. In our high schools, we have Raina, I'm sorry, come on up here, please, Raina. Raina is at Costa Nova, and Julia Guzman is at Harvard.
Hello.
And Nancy Puvel, and those positions are out of LCAP. Nancy and Angelica also do many of the functions of their school community coordinator, although they're paid out of different funding pots, so they're not out of LCAP. Now, independently, the school community coordinators did collectively create, it's 8 o'clock, and so the electricity rates go down, so I have to remind myself to plug in my car. And anyway, so these are goals that the school community coordinators have developed collaboratively. This is their role. Families trust the school. They feel welcome. They're empowered. They're supportive of the school. They're advocates. They learn to advocate for their child's children. That they believe that any success is possible. They're confident. They attend. Attendance is a very important part of the role of school community coordinators. And that they love learning, feel inspired, and achieve their educational goals in school. School community coordinators provide enforced translation, parent support, advocacy, communication, phone calls, attendance support, parent meetings, DLAC, ELAC, input on LCAP district initiatives, links to community services, community events, of course, fundraisers, celebrations, performances, ongoing education regarding reclassification sealed by literacy, and teacher support. So I can't imagine, you know, the amount of translation and communication that happens through our school community coordinator is absolutely essential for our expanding available to our school. So again, to meet the needs of our whole child, I want to give a little overview of the work of our school community coordinator.
Marianne, I also asked you, I know last minute, but can you speak to a little bit about how we're working to measure the impact?
Absolutely. We measure impact in several ways. Again, the most important way to measure the impact is survey families, asking families themselves. And you'll see it's very interesting, because it's a very interesting dynamic often that happens with families, where they might be very reluctant to come directly to the principal. But to have that school community coordinator as that contact person to the school is a really important thing. So survey to families. Who's the first person they call? How do they get information about the school? That is really important. So we have a survey for that. We also have a survey for school leaders and people that are working, teachers that have large numbers of ELs in their classrooms as well. How are they being supported by our school community coordinators? We also have, you know, simply a contact log. We keep a running log of all the contacts that we're making and the kinds of contacts that the school community coordinators are reaching out to people. So just as far as a quantifiable data piece, it's pretty impressive. The number of calls, emails, phones, texts, even getting their personal texts out to families so they can be easily contacted and have that person. So those are the three ways we're measuring right now. And you know, we've had school community coordinators, and I can't remember how many years we've had them. It's hard to, you know, we don't really have a clean before and after data set, but I think we would absolutely see a tremendous amount of change should we not have school community coordinators, of course. You know, go back the other way, you can see it's going that direction. I'm sorry, did I keep going? All right.
Can I ask?
Sure.
Just sometimes it's helpful just to know, like, what are some of the pieces? So Faye is my community coordinator. In the last month, she's put on the Tomalata, which is one of our two main events with amazing papooses, et cetera. She has worked with a family whose one of our boys' father was killed on the levee. So she's been working with that family, trying to get him support. Today, she is dealing with families who were affected by ICE, and also at school doing a
Corazon? Corazon, that's what she's tonight.
Which is an 8-week program for our parents to support just family involvement and family interaction and communication and things like that. So she's busy.
So maybe I'll give you a snapshot. Good afternoon. My name is Reina Luis, and I'm the school community coordinator at Costa Nova High School. So just a snapshot of my day today. I sage in the morning because the day that comes is often challenging. Today I worked with three fifth-year seniors working on senior projects trying to graduate. I had a student that's been removed from home, you know, that, you know, was in crisis, and so sort of supporting that, working, I'm making plans for a field trip for next week to earn P credits, planned my day for tomorrow, so I have a student who is working on a project for fine arts, and so he is a cook by training, that's what he's been doing. And so he had, the teacher gave him a project on Frida Kahlo, and Frida Kahlo has a book, there's a book called Fiestas de Frida, and there's cooking and recipes and menus, and so we pulled that out because I thought that would help him, and so he's going to be cooking some culinary arts to earn arts credit, or fine arts credit. So just finding creative ways of working with our students to ensure that they're graduating, that they feel that they are where they belong, and that they're cared for,
and at the end of the day, home and stage again and let it all go. So I'm pleased to be here tonight, and it's been an honor to be a school community coordinator at Western Ohio for the last 3 years. Thank you.
Sheila.
Okay. So you told me now you don't know the answer to this question, but I am curious. My perception is that we always had some community coordinators, but we've increased them considerably over the last decade or so. Does that seem about right?
Yes.
Yes?
Yeah.
And I just want to comment that I can't imagine anything that it's been more worth our money, that the work of the community coordinators in the schools had an enormous effect, as far as I can tell, and that sitting here a year later from our current government, going through the sanctuary cities disaster and the ICE situation, I went to those meetings where the parents were trying to figure out what they were going to do with their children, and the community coordinators were the heart and soul, because they know the community, because they knew the language, because they were able to help people with both mourning what they could not change and working to get what they could. So I really would like you to, from my point of view, to let them all know that they are known, they're seen, and really appreciated.
I want to acknowledge that we don't have measures in this particular report, and that's been a request for all of our LCAP reports. It's our community coordinators were put in before we were taking regular kind of monitoring data, and I was sharing with Patty and Jeremy. I added a school community coordinator when I was at Brantsbury Middle School. We were over 50% Spanish-speaking families, and we didn't have anybody in the office who spoke Spanish. Mm-hmm. And I didn't at the time think about what are the measures I'm going to put in. I was really worried about access. I was worried about having translation for meetings with parents, for teachers, and for me, and because my Spanish is okay, but it can't have the really deep, meaningful conversations that needed to happen at the school site. So we didn't do a good job at that time, you know, and that's, we added at the middle schools at that time, there were part-time positions at the elementary schools that have been extended. When we had the LCAP, we moved the school community coordinators into supplemental funding because it was a place where it made sense to be funding those resources for our English learner families. And we're working on all of our metrics. We're working on revising our metrics for the LCAP and revising our metrics for the goals and metrics. And we want to get better at choosing the right data and the right measures to really show what's working, what's not working with what we're funding. But I do just want to acknowledge that it didn't follow that format we agreed to in May, and because we haven't had specific measures in place other than kind of tallying contacts, but Marianne is working with school community coordinators this year to put that in place.
Another metric is, you know, how many parents are participating in our parent meetings, in our DLEF, in our ELEF, et cetera, and that's a real important role of our school community coordinators to come with them to these meetings, to get them to meetings, and to really welcome them as a dad. And so I can have those numbers for you tomorrow. We have those tallies. We keep a very close track on that. You know, it takes a little bit of time with turnover in positions too. That to do, you know, like any position in our schools, it requires a relationship. And you'll see somebody who's in a position for a while really build that momentum and that relationship and that trust. And you know, we have a vacancy now at Mission Hill for our school community coordinator. So it's going to take a little time to get that trust going, that person in that position where they have a relationship. But it's just been a really wonderful thing with our school community coordinators being that person at our schools and being sometimes the only person in the office that speaks Spanish. I think the fact that our principals are supplementing, like Kristen does with Faye, bringing her up to where she really can be that person there and putting, you know, matching with what comes from the LCAP, 50 to 0.5 from LCAP, with additional site monies to bring her up to full-time so she could be there for kids. So.
Comments
or
questions?
Go ahead.
Okay.
we start looking at data or trying to figure out what kind of data we want to collect, certainly it sounds like we need to reach out to the parents that the community coordinators are having a huge impact on in terms of their engagement. I'd also like to request a way of having the community coordinators reach out to the students to try to figure out where are the potential gaps or areas of miscommunication between the students. And I'm thinking particularly of Harvard, where we have a lot of our newcomer population, where the language barrier can be kind of a huge thing, that challenge for those students. And communicating what their needs are to be more integrated into the school community across, both inside the classroom and outside the classroom. And I think the community coordinators are the heart and soul of many of our schools. Mm-hmm. I know Faye Silva at Brands of 40, she's the heart and soul of that school, mm-hmm. from my perspective, for all families, not just for Latino families. And I think they have a special connection with students as well, that transcends the classroom. And so having them engage with students to figure out what are student concerns, what are student needs, how can we reach out to students in more diverse ways and more innovative ways to engage them more holistically in the whole school, inside the classroom and outside the classroom, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cynthia.
Thank you for the information. I just had a quick question. I was wondering, regarding suspensions and expulsions, we were looking at data at a study session, and some of it raised a lot of questions in terms of student populations and if there's disproportionate suspensions or expulsions in some cases. Do these school community coordinators serve as liaison with families, between families and administrators in a suspension or expulsion process? Do they sometimes sit in on those or meetings or serve as advocates in those processes?
Actually, Chris, do you want to take that one?
Yeah. They often will be sitting in on those mm-hmm. meetings and providing translation and helping parents understand documents and asking questions, asking clarifying questions of us on behalf of the family, those kinds of things.
Thank you.
Raina, do you want to comment?
Sure. At Coastal North High School, I sit on a weekly attendance review meeting every Thursday morning, and we review our student attendance. We have a process by which we look at, you know, our interventions. We look at the barriers and the challenges of students. We come up with, after a truancy letter one, we come up with a case manager, someone, a staff member on campus. It can be our security, it could be one of our counselors, it could be any of the staff. And we're all trained on, at the beginning of the year, we were trained on trauma-informed. And I should post to know was doing a really good job in Monarch in that area, or that's important for small schools. So we do do due diligence in that, and we do communicate with parents. On truancy letters, correspondence that they get, and then also make recommendations or advocate on behalf of students.
Claudia.
Yeah, I see with clarity the role with students and with parents. I'm curious about what it means to principals to have the community coordinator. How does that affect you in your role?
As a former principal, I'll give you a good current principal.
Good evening, everybody. I find Victoria essential mm-hmm. to our community at GOLD. She not only serves our EL families, but at a site that's 70% Title I, she works with that gap in the demographics as well. So we're close to 50% EL, 655. She serves a lot of our Title I families that are not Spanish speakers, working with families to make sure they're getting free and reduced lunch, making sure they're registered in the ACEs after school program, real direct impact. Mm-hmm. So on a daily basis, but also on a monthly through meetings, she's helped really increase the participation in both ELAC and our PPO, encouraging families to come and help make decisions about that type of budget. She even helped recruit some members to our site council, things like that. So it's really essential, not just to the day in and day out of the school, but kind of the overall picture. So she serves the whole school in a lot of ways, not just our EL or Title I population. I see her many times helping kids with lunch or going into a classroom to check in with the teacher. Occasionally on a rainy day, she'll go in and help her meet somebody to go to the restroom really quick and the indoor recess, those kinds of things. But really pitching in school-wide. And it's a huge asset. And I think it's really helped to make our school a tight community, given a huge range of demographics. Mm-hmm. Because she and I and Evie are a constant. And that's a huge piece.
Any other comment?
Can I ask one?
Yeah, go ahead.
I just have one more comment to make that Cindy reminded me of in terms of looking at suspension and expulsion data and seeing that, try as we may, we still have some of the same markers as the rest of the United States in terms of, you know, the ethnic difference. And I was talking to Chris about this, that when we had the problem with special ed and an over amount of a certain population, I was reading the research on it, and one of the things that they noted most clearly was that they would find the difference, not in the small schools or large schools or city schools or whatever, in terms of more equal bringing of people into special ed. They would find it in terms of whether there were staff at the schools that had a deep knowledge of the cultural implications of behaviors and conversations. And if that staff existed at the school and was used in that way on a regular basis, then there were less students that were over-identified or under-identified. And I'm assuming from that there would also be less students that would necessarily be suspended or expelled. And so I'm making this comment because I'm hoping that perhaps that's something that we could even ask the community coordinators about in terms of what they're seeing of how we are perceiving certain behaviors and comments that might be educational towards us and with dealing with these issues.
Yeah, just yesterday we had a community coordinator meeting, and it was really wonderful. We started sharing the work that we've done about trauma practices in schools with the school community coordinators, and they are so on the pulse of what the students are experiencing. It's an amazing group. It's just such a wonderful group to work with, and they really do see they see the school through a child's eyes as well. What are the interactions with different various school staffs, and how can we support these kids that might be experiencing or displaying behaviors, and how it could be related to something that they've experienced, and you know, and a culturally efficient response to that behavior is super important, and that's team is amazing.
The
community coordinators are all
right
with that lens, so thank you for bringing that up.
Are there any comments? Oh, do you want to make one more comment?
I want to just shed a little light on one area, and I don't know if this is the community coordinators, it's within their purview, but particularly for our boys in the high schools, the athletics can be a huge way for them to connect to the whole school community. And I know that the language barriers can be there, particularly between the players and the coaches. Mm-hmm. The coach doesn't have the language of the players. There's hesitancy, perhaps, in including them in the team environment. And if there's a way that we can tap the other players, other coaches, to help bridge that, then we bring those boys into the teams, we bring them into the larger school community, and that engagement is there, that sense of belonging is there, and hopefully we keep those boys successful both inside and outside the classroom.
Go ahead, Patty.
And Lily, I
I wrote a note to myself on this in that particular area. It would also be, I would hope that it could be mindful from the opposite direction, is that the coordinator might recognize, especially in athletics, there are behaviors and expectations that have been ingrained for a long time. Coaches do not understand that maybe the population that they have in front of them does not respond well, not necessarily even to the language barrier, but in certain sports, or I'm going to use the word that my brother-in-law's mother used, macho, very macho behavior. So if they can help identify that to build a bridge, because I'm 110% behind what you're saying, as athletics engaging our boys in the, especially, I'd say starting at about 9 years old, they get pretty rambunctious to play. So thank you for hearing that.
Any comments from the public? Thank you, Raina. Thank you, Marianne, very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And I'd like to move on to the workforce housing feasibility presentation and thank our patient.
Yeah. So 2 years ago, we in August, two years and a few months ago in August, we began investigating the possibility of workforce housing and what that looked like in other districts, how other districts were using that to recruit and retain their workforce. We visited several school districts, districts that have been successful, districts that have not been successful in implementing workforce housing programs. And this summer, Trevor has been along for that whole ride, and Pat has been actively engaged since he's come on board with us in looking at different districts, in talking to different superintendents that have programs in place. And we met with Dominic Dutra from CDG this last summer and asked them to put together a potential feasibility study for us to move forward more assertively with an investigation of workforce housing for our school district. So, Dominic.
Well, great, board. Thank you so much for the opportunity to be here. As the superintendent has noted, my name is Dominic Dutra, and I'm going to jump right into the presentation on the full agenda today. So just a little bit of background on the firm. I'm one of the original founders of the company. We're a certified B Corp, so if you're not familiar with that, Patagonia is a certified B Corp. Kickstarter. Essentially, it's corporations that have a socially responsible charter, and that is organization. You have to be certified, and we went through that process. And really what we're looking at is working with public institutions on being socially responsible with the use of their land. And this is really born out of my 30 years, not just in the real estate industry, but from a public service perspective, with my father and I served multiple terms on the Fremont City Council, where we had a lot of land use issues, such as providing affordable housing opportunities for our residents, getting BART to San Jose, getting cars off the street. And if you're familiar with our auto manufacturing plant in the Great Recession, it closed. We had 5,000 employees, and that is now Tesla. And so it became abundantly clear to me and my partners that being socially responsible with the land that you have is very, very important. And yet, there are some very real challenges throughout the state of California, and we're seeing it virtually in every district that we visit. I literally was just yesterday at a joint City Council Planning Commission meeting in the city of Pittsburgh with another one of our school district clients on a workforce housing project, a 2 to 3 acre project with about 60, 80 units of workforce housing. Went extremely well. And what you're seeing here is we very much encourage districts that we work with is to start off not with anecdotal evidence as to whether or not workforce housing is needed, but just do a survey. And this really hits close to home. My daughter is a former Teach for America teacher. I lived in Fremont with my wife 31 years, and my daughter is now in Santa Clara County. She has a master's degree. She's a special education teacher. And she spends 50% of her gross salary for a 400-square-foot studio. And it's just not sustainable. So what happens, especially with recruiting and retaining, this is where we're starting to really start to see some real challenges for school districts. And again, I'm seeing it with my own daughter. I don't think she's going to move home. But I think she's definitely looking at some solutions, and one of them is not driving 2 to 3 hours from work by living in an affordable community. It's just not sustainable. So we really look at this, and we're seeing the evidence in districts that this is really becoming a recruiting and a retention issue. You're really trying to give your, especially that those teachers you're trying to recruit and those teachers you're trying to retain in that first 1 to 5 years, an opportunity to embed themselves in your community, giving them an opportunity. And we encourage strategic partnerships with companies like Landed, you may have heard of them, and other state programs that give them opportunities to have down payment assistance. But first, they need to embed themselves in your community. So, you know, they are hired, like my daughter. She's idealistic. She speaks Spanish from here in Chile, and she really feels called to do what she's doing. So initially, they're idealistic. They don't think about the challenges. But about the third year, they start thinking about these challenges, and one of them is housing. And so what we really try to do, as we're doing in various other districts, is look at building studio 1 and 2 bedroom units. I said my daughter's in a 400-square-foot studio. I didn't say she was complaining about it. She's fine with that because she gets away from home. She gets to go out and do different things. She's a yoga instructor and all the other great stuff. But she just needs it to be affordable. Mm-hmm. So what we really try to do is find a way in these feasibility analysis to do not just a physical analysis. I'm going to walk you through looking at sites, and we would work with your staff to geographically look throughout your district to see if, in fact, there are some underutilized pieces of property that you might be able to use for affordable housing, but would target itself at 30% of the gross salary as opposed to 50%. 30% is essentially the standard. And if you can do that in a way that those subsidized rents, and this is one of the dynamics that is now going on, very, very unique. We have historically low rates of interest on financing these and historically high market rents. So even subsidized rents, if you can build something and use financing at low rates, those subsidized rents, very often, we're doing this for another district, we just did this analysis, will actually cover the debt service associated with that, even at a subsidized rate, and yet save your teacher somewhere in the order of $500 to $600 a month in rent, which is huge for them. And so at any rate, as we look at this, and I should note, let me back up real quickly. One of the nice things, too, is as that debt gets paid off, and there's different ways to do it. Some districts are doing the COP, certificates of participation. Others are doing them through bond. One of our districts we're working with actually is doing it all with the bond. The key in San Mateo County Community College District is, by the way, on their third affordable housing project. They started in 2002 when a governmental relations director for them went to their superintendent and said, we really need to look at this because we're losing people. They built 3. I encourage you to take a look at it. We're happy to take you on a tour of those if we're doing with another district board. Very, very successful. But more and more public subsidies are becoming available. Cities are looking at putting some of their in-lieu affordable housing funds into workforce housing. And also, as that debt gets paid off, the beauty is that ongoing rental income, even on subsidized level, becomes a very significant unrestricted income source for school districts to use for their operating budget looking into the future. So there's a socially responsible rationale. We need to recruit and retain teachers. Fiscally responsible perspective says, long term, we're going to own an asset that I think we would all recognize is going to be a valuable asset because essentially it's a real estate asset. But at the end of the day, it's going to be paying rent that, unlike selling capital property, you can actually use as part of your operating budget. So what is feasibility analysis entail? As you know, nobody wants to do any more development. I used to serve with the mayor who said everybody likes housing until they get their house, and then they don't want any more housing. And that's kind of a reality. With that said, so we have to be able to go and data collection, trying to find pieces of property. And again, typically a startup, a project would be 2 to 3 acres. You try to do something, find a piece of property that is not going to be impactful to surrounding residential neighborhoods. Especially for single-family detached. You're looking at townhouse-style development. You'll see a sample project I'm going to show you. But you're really trying to see, can you get it entitled, what we call entitled, meaning can you work with the city and the community and the neighborhood and garner their support, not just for the socially responsible issue of providing affordable housing. That doesn't always win the day, but can you design it in such a way that it doesn't impact them in a negative way from a traffic perspective, from a view perspective, looking to the back doors, that sort of stuff. So we go out, we do site visits, we do site assessments, look around, make sure that we're not going to have a problem in terms of disrupting the neighborhood. We want to look at deed restrictions, other things that could constrain our ability to build the housing. And then we want to do an actual site study. We were, again, before the Planning Commission and City Council yesterday in the city on the workforce housing project. We showed them a site plan. And we showed them three site plans. Ironically, with the architect that worked with their district. Good one, by the way. And just looked at what this would look like from a site perspective, what it would look like from an elevation perspective, maybe the view of how does it look, what sort of density does it fit in that neighborhood, does it fit in that property, and what are the unit sizes? How many units are you going to get? And does it effectively reflect what your survey said from your employees and staff? I should say, it's not just teachers, it's classified staff and others who have this challenge. In fact, classified actually more so than the employees. And what we would really like to do is come up with multiple sites. We're suggesting three. You can certainly look as many as you want or as few as you'd like. We like the idea of looking at multiple sites so you have a choice. We are looking at essentially from a matrix perspective, what are the benefits of doing a project here versus some of the downsides, and let you as a board and from a policy perspective give us direction on which you'd like us to pursue, if you'd like to pursue. Essentially, at the end of the feasibility study, if you determine it just doesn't make sense from a fiscal perspective, a land use perspective, or you just don't want to go down. And I will say this, having been on the city council, when we first started doing affordable housing, we were very, very progressive. But I can tell you, I used to joke with our staff, that the two words that used to scare to death of council members were dense and affordable. It just was a reality. And yet our council kind of put our shoulders together and said, this is the right thing to do, we're going to do it. And I will tell you as a board, and you have a lot of different things that you're trying to accomplish, if this is something that you're going to do after the feasibility study, it really is something that you're going to have to be committed to, because it's a 2 to 3 year process. In fact, you'll see, that's a Santa Clara Unified School District project, you probably heard of it, it's Casa del Maestro, which was something they started off, they did 30 units and they did 40 more units. They're over demand, they have surplus demand for those units. And as you've seen with the price of housing to rental and purchase, those units are critical for those teachers. So this is the timeline. This is my last slide. This tells you it doesn't happen overnight. And this is where, if you're going to start down this road, be committed to the process all the way down the road. And we really do need, when I say we, I'm just simply saying, what it takes to be successful is it's you. It's the board. You really have to be the voice in the community that says, we understand there are going to be potential impacts. Now, we're trying to mitigate those and try to keep those lower, non-impactful. At the end of the day, we did one project, I will tell you, on a 10-acre piece of property. It had been vacant for 30 years, never used as a park, it was a former school site. And that district was desperately in need of technology upgrades and a number of different things going on with the educational mission that they had in the organization. There was one neighbor, former city engineer, who simply thought that that 10 acres was now his open space reserve. Mm-hmm. And I will guarantee you that when properties are left underutilized or surplus, people come to a perspective that it's theirs. And I understand that. It's a community asset. It really does take your board, and your staff is working on so many different important things. If you're going to go down this road, I just cannot accentuate the fact that it's going to take you to say it's important or not, or simply say it's really not if we don't really think it's important. This is your timeline. As you see, it's 40 to 43 months to actually get the project done. But I will tell you, once you have that asset done, and again, we try to start off on a 2 to 3 acre project, so you can see, does it work? Does it make sense? Is it really, and we certainly can bring Barbara Christensen here, who led the three projects in San Mateo County. And you just look online and you can see her comments. It started off as a concept in 2002, and we're now in the third project because it works. It absolutely works. So that is the end of the presentation, and I'm certainly available and privileged and honored to be here before you. Any questions that you might have?
an action item.
Did you want to make a comment before?
I just want to say this is an action item. We are asking you to approve a feasibility study this evening. Mm-hmm. So we'll have time for question and answer, but ultimately we'll be looking for a motion.
Sheila.
Okay, so I'm for this idea conceptually. I see all the big problems being early on in terms of the community. And so I'm trying to be just clear. When you talk about feasibility study, you're talking first about, you know, what would fit where and environmentally, whether it's feasible?
When you say environmental, you mean phase one, phase two, meaning the soil environmentally? Or
I mean anything that you want to tell me it is.
So essentially, it's a great question. It's actually because in development, when you say feasibility analysis, it can be very in depth. And when you start doing environmental, phase one, phase two is the soil. Is there anything environmental before they'll get a deal with it? Geotechnical, we're not talking about that. We're really just doing a very high level, trying to keep it as cost effective as possible, frankly, to see is there a site that we can fit some housing on? How many units? How does it fit in that surrounding neighborhood? And you know, if you want us to have a community meeting, we can. I mean, that is something that really is up to the board as to when you start making things like this public, that you're looking at this, because you're right, remember that as soon as you start looking at a site and it becomes public, there will be people who are going to say, oh, you know, let me take that into account. But right now, we're just doing a very high-level review and seeing if we can site plan it onto a site. You may not have a site. You may, but you may not.
So are you saying... Okay, so the initial feasibility you're looking, is this feasible? You know, you're not going into the kind of nitty-gritty that...
It's not CEQA.
It's not CEQA.
I wasn't even thinking CEQA. I was thinking our community.
It will include a financial analysis, meaning looking at just kind of some of the ideas for how you might finance it versus
right.
the rents that might be, and how would that be covered? It's really just giving you enough information to say, do we want to go to the next? And if you look at the next step, like due diligence, that's the more in-depth feasibility study.
Okay. And you're saying that in some cases you actually do gauge the community resistance and interest, and in other cases the board chooses to do that themselves?
No. What I'm suggesting is that engagement with the community we leave to the direction of the board. Every board is different. Some boards say, hey, listen, I would rather go now. Let's have a community meeting, show them the site plan, show them the site, tell them we're thinking about this. Others say, you know, do the feasibility, do the site due diligence, let ourselves kind of slowly have this.
So I'm just trying to understand, do you sometimes take the direction of the board to talk to the community?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, that's what I'm asking.
We're working in Sonoma, where they've had the fires, and Marin, and all kinds of interesting communities on housing. So absolutely. In fact, community engagement really is our unique expertise.
Okay.
It's not really as much. We do develop it, but that's what it's really all about.
And the action item today is for the beginning of this, Chris, or the feasibility study?
The initial feasibility study.
Okay.
Patty.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dutra. In this initial study, do you engage our county supervisors or those who, here in Santa Cruz, right across the street from Harbor, we had a project that just happened. It was a joint entity through a church was the site. I'm sure they went through something. To what level in this initial study do you go to? I mean, it sounds like it's overview. Is there actual property that could possibly work and funding? Anything deeper than that?
Great question, because really, at the end of the day, if we can work with your staff, and again, we never independently go and start having these conversations. We want to work with your staff and the board to make sure it's okay. But to your point, and it's a good question, we think that's very important, to get some preliminary indication from city staff, county staff, and others in elected positions. You know, are they supportive of this? Because at the end of the day, they're going to need to be in order to
And we've had very clear statements of support from both the city and our county supervisors, both John Leopold and Ryan Coonerty, for this effort. Mm-hmm. And the city was, you know, they continue to be excited about this as a possibility and want to provide as much support as they can as we've participated. Part of our investigation has also included our participation with the city of Santa Cruz, PAMF, and
Dominican Kaiser.
Dominican, yeah. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Dominican.
Kaiser's in the game now, too.
And UCSC talking about workforce housing, looking at models, and that's been an ongoing part of our process as we move forward.
And I should note, just it was interesting in the meeting yesterday, one of the people in the audience who was clearly someone who went to every single council meeting came up, and so when he first started going up after our presentation, I thought, here we go. And it was very interesting, his comment. He said, I could not be more supportive of this project because it's going to be housing for the people who live in our community. Now, people who are coming in and buying expensive housing and are going to be driving off to Silicon Valley, they live in our community. I can see them riding bikes. I can see them carpooling to their jobs. So it was just very encouraging. I mean, the Planning Commission and the City Council have the same perspective, but they have the residents. And that was just awesome. Very exciting.
Any other questions?
I actually have another question.
Okay.
Okay, I'm not sure if I didn't read this well enough, or I just want to, even though we're just doing the first part, can you tell me what site due diligence and entitlement process mean? The rest of it I understand.
So once we were to pick a site, then we come back with another proposal to support that, of course. But it would look at, really now let's talk about things like the site itself in terms of soil, in terms of geotechnical.
Okay, so that's when you do that.
Yes, I mean, it is really doing that. Any development looks at the site. This is when you start looking at things like with councils, CEQA, negative, that sort of stuff, to figure out really now can you really do it. Because you'll see the next one is, that's the big one, the entitlement. You really need to do that before you take the next step and say, we're ready, because once you get the entitlement, now you're going.
Entitlement means you basically
means
are
you're getting the actual city and or county approval
okay.
to build it.
Okay.
And once you start going down that road, you're going to build it.
Right.
Well, let me back up. Even if you don't build it, and this is how some of our clients were looking at it, they end up with an entitled site for residential development, which is more valuable than just vacant land. But really, once you hit that, what you're doing is to provide workforce housing, affordable workforce housing.
Okay. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Are there any comments from the public on this item?
Carlson,
yes,
representing the Greater Santa Cruz Federation of Teachers, and we are speaking in favor of going forward with the study. We're very grateful, Chris, to you and Pat for taking the leadership on this, and the cabinet, the district management has been keeping us informed, and each step when we meet monthly, they give us updates on where they're going with this. And some of you might be aware, Cynthia Chase did some listening sessions with our teachers this fall, and I wasn't able to go to the first one, but the second one I went to at B40, and it was really powerful and sad. There were teachers crying. There was a teacher who said she's 45 and has two kids and, you know, thinks she might have to leave the area. We have one of our librarians who's close to retirement saying, I don't even know if I can finish my career here because people are being evicted from units to turn them into vacation rentals and Airbnbs. So there's clearly a need for housing. And we know that our salaries, as much as we want them to creep up a little, they're never going to match. They're not matching the rate of housing costs and rental costs increasing. I mean, that just wouldn't be possible. So we're very appreciative, and we're looking forward to hearing the results of the study. So thank you.
Move approval.
Second.
And Tarika was the first part.
Thank you.
And Cynthia was the second.
Thank you.
All those in favor?
I would like to actually make a comment.
Oh. Okay.
Sorry. No, it's just I wanted to. My daughter is volunteering at one of the local elementary schools, and she was there, and they discovered what her name was, and they said the people were like literally crying and saying, we hope you're going to vote for this. They're so thankful, you know, that this is going to happen. And it was very, really spoke to what's happening in this community for more than just teachers. But one of the things that I found myself a little bit concerned about is the need is so great that we need to also manage expectations as we're doing it. Because I don't think we have enough room in the town to build the housing we need, but I just think that we have to also be thinking about what are we talking about and for who, and how, you know, how are we going to present this to the teachers, because I don't want them to all be furious down the line that they, it didn't include them, because we can only do, you know, what we can do. So I just wanted to comment on that.
I think it's a great point about managing expectations. I mean, despite all the affordable housing we did at Fremont, we, of course, didn't meet all of the need. Mm-hmm. Although I will say, ironically, in addition to Teach for America, my dominated city here, I don't think we've ever heard of city, it's a AmeriCorps program, and they have this great Starfish story where the person's walking down, and the guy's still Starfish, and they're like, what are you doing? And he's giving the same thing. I'm trying to save the Starfish because they're going to die. They just stay out here, and you throw them in and say, well, you're never going to get all of them. He says, well, yeah, I helped that one. And I think it really is sending a message to your teachers and staff that this is an important issue. Mm-hmm.
So, return to the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Oh, she can vote with us. A student, I'm sorry. Student. Yeah. You mean one of us, sorry.
Student recognition is also aye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Okay. Yeah, I know. Our next item is a single plan for student achievement.
So every year, each school works with their site council to build a single plan for student achievement that is aligned with our district goals, which are also our LCAP goals. And they build these plans in collaboration with their school teams. And tonight we have one principal from each grade span here, and I want to thank them for being through a very long meeting and after starting very, very early this morning. And we'll have Amariah kick it off with sharing about the plans at Galt.
Hello, everybody again. Okay, so this is our Galt single plan, and I met with our site council. We took a really hard look at our Galt data this year. We looked at data in many different areas, including data around the SBAC CAS, which is the state testing. We also looked at local data that we had, which is our reading index, Scholastic Reading Index. We also looked at our social emotional surveys and data with our students, and we set some goals. And so I'm going to share them with you today. I'm just sharing ELA and math with you at this time, but I would love to share more if you want to come check out our site and talk about this one. So our data, I'll be honest, was not pretty, and it was hard to look at, and we spent a lot of time really looking at the data, looking backwards. This isn't just a one-time look. Our site looks at the data on a regular basis, 3 times a year, all of our staff and teachers and student learning teams. We look at our data weekly in our PLCs. And so we were really thoughtful about what kind of goals we wanted to set. And so we looked at our students that were not meeting the standard, and we decided that this year we really wanted to focus on moving those kids up. So we have a lot of students in the red, and so if you were to distribute our school in red, yellow, and green, kind of like who's not meeting it, who's kind of there in the middle, and who's meeting it, we have a lot of students in red, and they make a lot of growth every year, and they move from the bottom of the red to the top of the red. Mm-hmm. So this year, our goals are really around moving those kids out of red into yellow. And so looking at those students and seeing what we can do. We're continuing to always work all of our students and move them forward. That's our number one goal, is wherever you are, to move you forward. But we really are focusing some very specific interventions and supports and teacher training and support around the classroom, which we refer to often as like tier one, what is every child getting? And so these are those goals. So we're looking at trying to move a minimum of 8% of our students from the red, not just to the top of the red, but out into the yellow, and getting them to much closer to meeting the standard or getting there. And you'll see the similar, you can read, so you'll see that it's similar for fourth grade, fifth grade, and we're using our unit of measurement around CASP data, which is the state data, but we're monitoring that in detail, looking at our local assessments. So we've implemented this year, and that's really around our action steps. So I'm going to share that with you, because that's the exciting work that we're doing, the action steps.
So our grade levels are collaborating and giving input, and we're implementing the new MAP and CPAA, which is an assessment K2 and 3-5. So we're using that as a universal screener. It's computer-based. It's different. One of the most important things we're also doing is continuing to do assessments where you sit beside the child, because we think that having the computer is one thing, and it gives us one piece of information, and the other part is sitting next to a child and using, I mean, going back to that Latin root of assess, to sit beside a child, and so to really get information that way, too. So we don't want to lose that. We think those are both critical pieces of data. And so we have implemented this new screener.
Excuse me.
And so we're looking at the data and seeing how it correlates to the data that we're using as well when we sit with children and do reading assessments or look at fluency, things like that. We're also doing a lot of work around teacher clarity, learning goals, success criteria, and our PLC work, which are those visible learning strategies. And I know you've heard some things, and you'll hear more from my colleagues, because district-wide we're really working on that, educating administrators about it, our skill team's doing a lot of work around it. And one of the most important things that's happening at Galt this year, and we worked really hard on designing this professional development plan last year, spent a lot of hours in it, is that our entire staff, including our librarian, the speech pathologist, have all been GLAAD trained in the last year to 2 years. So GLAAD stands for Guided Language Acquisition Development. It's a really, I'm not sure what the word is, but it's a really amazing way to integrate ELD throughout the day. But it's not just serving your ELs, it's really teaching students how to read nonfiction text. So we're supporting our native speakers as well as our EL students. And so we've designed a plan in which all of our staff has been trained in the last 2 years, year and a half. Every teacher, I've been trained as well, I was trained previously. And then this year we've created a release day for teachers throughout the year, actually several of them, where teachers are doing planning. They're working with Elizabeth Lindsay and Heather Murphy, our district coaches, so they meet with them on Fridays. They're going through the content standards, they're applying the ELD framework to it, and then they're also creating GLAAD materials. So GLAAD has lots of chants. It really breaks up parts of speech. It pushes nonfiction reading and writing, and so kids are reading about content that they're learning about. So they're really reading about science or social studies, but they're also reading it through the lens of ELD and how to break it apart to understand parts of speech, syntax, all those things. And so it's a really powerful program, and it's really powerful when you see it TK through 5. So it's happening in every single classroom. We're working on 100% implementation. This year, we've committed to teaching 3 units that way, so 3 GLAAD units in a year. You could go into any classroom and see more than that, I'm sure, this year, as I've already seen at least 2 to 5 in different classrooms, depending on what they're doing. But every teacher, every classroom, and including our support staff, helping. And so that's been a huge piece and a really important part of our action step. The way that we're assessing that is we are implementing the CPA and MAP. We're looking at the student growth throughout the year. We gave a summer, kind of August assessment around it, and we'll be watching that growth and see. We'll also be looking at our local measure of sitting beside the child, doing a DRA, and seeing, do they correlate? Are we seeing the same growth and how that works? Our PLCs, we're using student work. That's the best thing to look at. What are they producing, and what does it look like? We are looking at our Tier 2 intervention data so that when we look at students and we see the flags and the concerns, how many students are needing a Tier 2 intervention, and how does that inform what we can do better in the classroom, not just for teachers, but for me, for support staff, things like that. And then an implementation of 100% of the GLAAD strategies in all of the classrooms, which I've already seen, and if you walk the site, you would see in a second. And then we're also looking at growth on the CAS. We really want our kids to do better on the state test. And so we're doing everything we can to help get them there. And then our last piece, just slide before I pass off here to Kristen, is that last year we set the goal that by fall of, or 2 years, the fall of 2017, that 70% of our GALT EL students would show at least 1 year's growth on the SALT. So taking them from where they are and they make a year's growth, and we hit that goal, more than 70%. And we feel really proud of that, being a school that's almost 60%+ ELL. Like, to make a year's growth on language arts is huge. And and they're getting ready to redesignate. They're getting closer, mm-hmm. and that's what we're really working with. We're getting kids to reclassify to be English proficient, and then we can look at them once they're English proficient. How are they doing on the state test? Mm-hmm. And so that was a huge celebration for our site, and I believe a lot of that is the impact of lab. So that's our plan. Do you have questions for me?
We're going to do questions at the end.
Our goal is focused around focusing on Tier 1 and Tier 2 strategies, so having some Tier 1 strategies throughout the classrooms, learning goals, success criteria, using impact teams to evaluate what the students are doing and what the next instruction model is, as well as trauma-informed services, teaching those self-regulation strategies to all staff, which we've done for all teachers, and we've started doing for our classified staff as well. And then our Tier 2 strategies to support reading intervention and math intervention and English ELD intervention, as well as Tier 2 strategies in social emotional areas, whether that's attendance or behavior or things like that. I mentioned already some of the Tier 1 supports. We're looking at that in different ways. So learning goals and success criteria, we're really focusing at our site on having four priority learning goals, so more big picture type things, writing informative essays, math practices, science practices, things like that, and then the success criteria and all the sub-learning goals that go into doing that. So having the departments and grade-level teams working on those together and then trying to figure out success criteria to help students with that. Our other Tier 1 focus is on continuing with accountable student talk, which we've been doing for a number of years. And this year, we are revising the way we do peer observations, and we're doing what we're calling collective efficacy groups. And teachers will be doing the first one next week. Teachers who have a common second period will be visiting maybe four or five classes and looking for who is participating in classroom discussions and what type of participation. Is it just sort of yes or no answers or something they can just sort of repeat? Or are they expanding on their thinking? Are they adding to or arguing with their peers in an appropriate way? Are they able to repeat what their peers are saying? And then our ELD, incorporating our ELD strategies. So we, for example, are using the math assessment to, we went through and evaluated, okay, what are the needs that all of our ELD students have? One of them, for example, was finding evidence in text. And so we then did some professional development with our site around an integrated strategy to support ELD students to help find evidence in text. And then the ELD team is looking at what can we do in ELD, and so some of those strategies. And then our Tier 2 supports have been our incorporation of iReady into the SSR time, that sustained silent reading time, using SSR time for our two math classes to do intervention time during that time, having a rotate, we have a rotating sixth grade elective wheel now where they move through three different 12-week sessions, and we pull kids out of one of those 12-week sessions for math intervention unless they need more, and so they can still have elective for part of the year, and then at seventh and eighth grade we do it for a semester. And then we have the Read 180 class, and one of our big focuses was on really working on improving our ELD, so moving from, we have two ELD classes, sort of a 1-2 and a 3-4, and now we have five ELD classes, so an ELD 1, an ELD 2, two ELD 3s, and an ELD 4, and that's one of the areas we've shown really, really have met our goals, so 70% of our ELD students increased by a year on the SRI, the readings, which is where they tended to score low, and 25% increased by 2 years growth. Assessments, we are focusing on math data because we can take that, we can do that at least twice during the year, and students who are in an intervention will do it three times during the year. student work to inform what is the next instructional strategy. So we looked, for example, at school-wide write. They did an impact team study and then redid the whole next unit based on what they learned from what kids need. Students work in terms of peer self-assessment. And then for the social emotional work, it's just a peer. So we are continuing to work. The graph just shows effect size, which is areas of growth. Clearly, we need to continue to work on increasing the area of growth for all students. 0.4 is a year of growth, so we're slightly under that. ELD actually met that, and then with some of the interventions, the RE180 and the iReady, we surpassed the year of growth in 1 year. So that's something. Oh, great.
I have an overview of briefly summarize the building goals in our single plan is developed to maintain efficient content-specific PLCs so that we're using student data to inform our work and making sure that we're aligning our curriculum to be as most efficient as we can with our students. The second goal is to increase underrepresented students in AP and honors, specifically focused with the Hispanic population, with even a deeper focus in our Hispanic males. Our third goal, which I'm going to elaborate on, is increasing student voice participation. And then finally, a continuing goal is to continue our success that we saw last year in our integrated math programs, one, and we're going to hopefully continue that progress in integrated two and integrated three programs. The focus that I would like to talk about tonight is student voice and participation. I want to talk to you and share that that's an important goal because student participation activities actually leads to solid academic growth and success of students, especially students at risk, which we have at Santa Cruz High School. The effect is improved behavior, school performance, school completion, positive aspects to making successful adults, and we want them to be able to be part of a larger community. Decreasing the dropout rate when you have students that are involved in extracurricular activities beyond sports. And that's kind of what I'm talking about. I'm not specifically talking about sports at all. This is about programs that enhance students learning beyond the classroom. And strengthening the school connection between student to student and also between students and adults. The different aspects that we're doing is an intentional focus on student leadership. I devote some of our allocation for FTE specifically to develop to a student leadership program, so it's so that we sustain it. It's student activities is a huge importance, I believe, in high schools or all schools, and it's so much. It's very important that I devote FTE to it. Maybe a larger English class is out there because I. And I believe that activities and sustaining that program at Santa Cruz High School is important. This is the first time in 15 years that Santa Cruz High School has actually had ASB elections. Mm-hmm. So you're starting to see an increase in student participation. Mm-hmm. This is the first time that we've had applications for the school board. We had 11 students apply. Leslie Daniela, who won that out by hands down. But what transpired is that now I have 11 other students that their voice is just as important, so they now part of the Principal Advisory Committee. And we met for the first time last month. We sat and spoke about a topic for an entire hour that you time flew by. And the voice that I heard from that student group is kind of motivating me to fix some things and to do what they ask me to do, because that's what I do. We have, for the first time, focusing on the club conference. And so each club is now represented in a conference at Santa Cruz High School where they meet monthly with the ASB coordinator and with Rishi Mall, my assistant principal, that's focused on that. We're devoting more time and energy into the link group program. So it's more tradition in the past. Link group has just been a one-day thing where freshmen come before school. This is now going to be a continued thing where they meet quarterly, at least with their upperclassmen. These are freshmen that are part of the link group process. And so we're going to check in with our freshmen quarterly to make sure that they're doing things appropriately. First time in about 15 years, the Trident newspaper is back. Have you checked it out online? You can check out it out from the Santa Cruz website. We have quarterly class meetings. That's never happened, or it hasn't since that I have been told. And so December will mark the first time that we'll meet with the senior class to start to motivate them about graduation and to renew their commitment, not only to Santa Cruz High School, but to the class, and making sure that they're participating in everything that we've provided for them. And then finally, just creating opportunities for student voice. Whether that's having them participate in designing the graduation ceremony or just participating in sharing their perceptions of what they feel is going on and could go better at Santa Cruz High School. Understanding in terms of branding and marketing, what does Santa Cruz High School stand for? What is it that we need to promote? From the simplest things of how can students obtain how can they obtain cargo gear? Well, you can't. Santa Cruz High School. You can go online and see a generic piece. So we're working on now, I've been working with a couple students in the media design program to create, we'll still maintain the cargo, but to let's expand it besides just a cargo on a t-shirt. And so just trying to represent what we believe Santa Cruz High School is and what it was sustained to be. And then finally, just the multifaceted communication. And that is just using some of our single time funds for 2 hours a day for our school community coordinator, because we have students and parents that don't speak English. And even though we're not funded by that technically, I think that's important to be able to connect to all parents. We have bilingual counseling services, a 0.2 FTE that is focused on that. Again, like I talked about, the transfer communication student focus group. We did a lot of that last year. I'm still working on a lot of the message that was given to me by students last year in terms of this year's progress, expanding into parent focus groups, and making sure that I'm creating a venue for parents besides the ones that I always hear and see from, and the ones that have difficulties connecting to administration, the principals especially. Working on creating more of a video process in terms of getting our messages out to the school community in terms of the high school students, so that we're not just doing the intercom. And then finally, check us out on Instagram, santa.cruz.com. Yeah, it's on the website. You can check that. Flip the slide. How are we doing? So, understanding how we're doing by perception data, by listening to students, by forums, by interviews, doing surveys, clearly from the principal advisory committee that's created, they're going to tell me what's happening, and just looking at the data in terms of the number of students and clubs and activities, which has increased over the year. And just the simple fact that Santa Cruz High School ASB can do not one, but two homecoming. And to see over probably about 300 students in a gymnasium on a Friday night after this second round of homecoming activities at advance, that was pretty exciting.
Yeah.
Things are looking up. And then finally, all of this connects to if students aren't at school, they're not going to learn. And so if you start looking at our attendance data, just even over this last year, over the course of the year last year, you will see an increase in student participation and attendance. We have a great attendance clerk that's John at the spot, and making sure that students are there, showing up every day. So we're seeing an increase in that, and it's something, I didn't choose to present. They did great jobs with the data. I kind of did it differently in terms of this is something that you feel, and it's certainly something if you walk on a Santa Cruz High School campus, you
Brent, did you want to show your video?
Well, do we have time?
Oh, we always do. Sure. We're nothing but time.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I do want to show it. This kind of, hopefully it'll work, right?
You have to go to the internet, right?
I don't know.
I mean, is it
internet? I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe.
So, let me just connect you.
Sounds like me, I don't know.
Give me a second.
It only takes a second.
Yeah.
Can I interject while Nancy's doing that? So today, you know, we get many parents that maybe aren't happy with different things. It seems to be kind of the role. And today I had a message from a parent that was a woman that she was in tears because of the student leadership that has come out in her son at Santa Cruz High that he never believed he had, but because a certain principal believed he had it, and took the time to write him a letter to a college that he never thought he was even going to college, has made such a difference. So I don't think you see that in data, but you feel it.
Say what?
I would think you could either link
now. Oh, so now you can just go back to your presentation?
Go to this one?
Yeah.
And then...
view, so slideshow.
It's slideshow from beginning.
No, from current
slide. And then click on your link.
We can see the circle.
Yay. Circle's good. Mm-hmm.
As long as it doesn't just stay.
If it doesn't work, I'll just see you all in my office at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning.
Your principal call.
I accept.
I'm actually in there by 6:30 if that works better. Now
go on to, it should come up on another tab.
Can I go back to this?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know, you guys.
It says resume slideshow up there.
Yeah,
that's
PowerPoint. There
we
go.
Well done.
From this year, and just to kind of show you what's happening.
Thank you.
Oh my God, I don't know what that is.
Better be careful, Polly.
Thank you. Are there questions from the board? Sheila.
Okay. I sort of had one thing for each of you. So I don't know, are there other people that could ask? Okay. So, Amariah, I'm still trying to get my head around this GLAD thing, and so I want to know, is it possible to come to the school at a particular time and actually see it happen?
Absolutely.
And is that, do they plan ahead, like when they're going to do it? And
yes. So, teachers are teaching it throughout the day in every grade level, so you could easily email me and set up a time for you to come see a couple of different classrooms and how they're teaching it. GLAD is a series of strategies that are embedded into a content area like science or social studies. So when they're teaching science or social studies, they're using a GLAD model for teaching. And they're using also those strategies throughout the day in different areas, but it's hyper-focused in science and social studies.
Okay, so would you call ahead and say, is this a good time to come, or would you just come?
Well, if you really wanted to see it in action, it would be great to set up a time, and then I would make sure, you know, I would check to say, oh, well, 11 o'clock, I know 4th grade is teaching science right now, and then it would be a good time to see it.
Okay, thanks.
So, and Sheila, if you could work through me, I'll help make that
happen. Oh, okay. That's great. I'm going to get there yet. So I'm still up, but...
I'm gonna, if you have one for everybody, I'm going to move on to Jeremy, and I'll keep you on the
list.
I'm
just letting you know.
Yeah. So you got your question.
Chris, you've got 36 weeks in a year. You've got 12 kids going through 12-week blocks.
three 12-week blocks, is that it?
You're right. So this is for our sixth grade electives, so they have 12 weeks on technology skills, 12 weeks on art, and 12 weeks on film production.
Could you see expanding this into the 7th, 8th grade?
Possibly right now. In the last multi-years, I don't know for how long, we've had semester blocks, so it's a little bit more complicated. So some kids are in band and some kids are in TWI, but the kids who aren't in that, we're in semester blocks for the full, 3 years. And with the sixth grade, we switched it to 12-week.
Yeah, it sounds interesting. Is Mission Hill thinking about doing the same?
I don't know.
Thanks.
Daniela.
I guess I just wanted to add to this student perspective to Mr. Klein's presentation that, like, I definitely in the past, I mentioned this sort of in my interview for this position, that I've developed a deeper love for my school, I think, this year and last year, and that has definitely been because of my leadership and also just the opportunities that we've been given as students, as he was saying. And just especially this year, I felt really supported by all the staff and administration and everybody. Really felt like that we're like that they're there for us.
Thanks. Okay, Sheila, you want to go to your next question?
Oh, this is a comment for you, Kristen. Did I understand right that you figured out to do math extra help and allow the student to have it and then have
electives.
An elective and then have math? Is that how it works?
Right, so they have three 12-week sections of electives. And they get pulled out of one of those for math intervention. And there have been kids who have said, I want to stay in, and they keep getting support, and other kids rotate out depending on what they're doing. And some other kids then rotate in for the next 12 weeks.
So I just want to say that in the 20 years or so that I've been back in Santa Cruz, this has been like a problem that everybody says, well, the kids can't have the electives, but then they don't get the help, and then they can't. And it's been a problem forever, and it's just so indicative of Branson 4E Middle that you guys have come up with a solution. I'm sitting here going, duh, like, why didn't we think of that before? And I think it's brilliant, and I want to thank you for continually doing that, where you come up with these brilliant solutions to problems that we've decided are never going to change. So that's all.
Do you have a comment or question? Did you want to go ahead?
Mine's just a comment.
Go ahead, Patty.
I'd like to speak to Mr. Klein. I do spend time around Santa Cruz High, and as a matter of fact, my husband had on the Cardinals sweatshirt today. I want to thank you. You know, I'm very sports-centric, and I have seen, and part of my board report was, that there is a change in the climate there, and students do seem to be more involved, or at least connected. And it's secular, so I'm looking forward to some really good things happening. And it makes me incredibly happy to hear about the governance piece, because with the rights role, the students will learn the responsibilities, and that's huge for our next generation. Thank you.
All right,
that's me. Okay. Santa Cruz High. A whole lot of my family members were in Santa Cruz High at one time or another. And I have to tell you that one of my family members nearly died of happiness when he found out that the Trident was started again. And he has been talking nonstop since I came back to California about how Santa Cruz High really needed more community, and they needed to feel that community was important. And he would harass me about whether they were there at lunch and all that kind of stuff. But he was so happy about that. I have to tell you, you made one person extremely happy, and you should hit him up for money because you made him really happy. But
what's his name?
Ryan Coonerty.
Write your supervisor.
Yeah, this was actually, it was started by a student who actually started last year bugging me a little about that.
Right.
Totally, this is a senior that initiated himself, found his teacher, our librarian, who was the staff facilitator on that. They meet on their own during lunchtime a couple times a week, and you will see at least a dozen students in there talking about it. It's marvelous. And
he would tell you, as he told me, that that's how it happens, that that's what happens, that when the administration is open to the idea, then the students become open to coming up with ideas.
So you
Now, and the other thing I wanted to say is that when I first heard that you were going to do this, you know, thing about more participation, I had mixed feelings about it because I always have worked with a lot of students at Santa Cruz High who liked Santa Cruz High because they didn't have to be on the football team, or they didn't have to be on the soccer team, or they didn't have to be school leaders to be seen as being of value. And I was worried that they were going to feel less so. So I just want to tell you that although I don't see that happening, and I'm happy to say that, there still have been students who have said to me, but I don't participate, so does that mean I'm no good? All I do is theater and the Queer Straight Alliance. And I go, how did that become not participating? Yeah. So there's a little thing you need to watch there, that everybody hears that everything is participating, because some of the students that are in unusual activities don't think they're the same as the usual activities. So I just wanted to pass that on, because I've had so many of those conversations of going, if you're in theater, you're in something. You know, and they go, oh, really? Oh, okay, then I am.
And that's certainly at the top of my head, being a former band director, that it's not about sports, and it's not about academic involvement. It's about inclusive in everything, whether that is the drama department or whether that's the carnival club.
Right.
It's being in something that you connect with.
So thanks for getting that, my beloved Santa Cruz High, believing in their own style of involvement.
Any comments? Thank you so much. Okay, our next item is an action item. It's the bid recommendation for Mission Hill Landscaping.
Yeah, we provide you some background information for this. What I will tell you, too, is the initial bid you have in front of you, the estimated cost for this project came in about $370,000. The bid came in at $457,000. Staff believes that we can get a better price. We only have one bidder on this project. So we'll recommend that you reject this and go out to bid again for this project. Hopefully get something better as well.
Any comments or questions? Staff recommendation to reject the bid and go out. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Student recommendation. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
It's unanimous, Nancy.
Thank you.
So our last item is kind of a hefty item. It's a recommendation for final reading for the board policy updates. Are there anything you want to add before, or questions or comments? Patty, do you have a question or comment?
I have a question. It's twofold, and I'm lined it because I knew it would be the agenda. And it's just to make sure that I'm clear on that. So under the president, I just wanted to make sure as we adopt the CSBA standards in our this reflects that one of the requirements is for the president to attend a president's board workshop. They can do that after election should they not go to the prior.
Yes.
So not to prohibit anybody on the board to have mm-hmm. that was the one first question. And then the second is, I do believe that we have talked about in the budget piece that there would be a budget for the board for their further education. Pat, is that part of our, am I imagining that?
It's in my budget. I have a budget for you guys.
Okay.
Oh, thank you, Nancy.
I just wanted to make sure that we have that outline. So thank you.
Yeah,
you are staying in it.
And I will, and CSBA does have different trainings throughout the year Are there any other questions or comments on these items? Is there a motion to approve?
I move approval.
Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Unanimous. Thank you.
Thank you. We have a study session actually on the 6th, correct?
Yes.
And that will be at Harbor?
Yes, it will.
Okay.